Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Jenny has traffic.
All right, I'm all nervous, but here's my rap. All right, you're gonna have a good drive today. There ain't no problems on the major roadways. Looking at country club, things will look pretty good like Robin Hood. Now I'm moving across the triad, yo, it ain't too bad, no. Now things look nice on 68, and I know you ain't gonna be late. So that was your traffic wrap today. Man, let's get some weather from my weather girl, Austin Cavanaugh. Come on, give us a weather boy. Give it to us, word.
Oh, there you go. Oh boy, Jenny, it's weather guy, by the way.
We interview Eric Weihenmayer, who climbed the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest. But he's gay.
Your favorite music radio. The countdown will begin this Saturday afternoon at 2, and again Sunday afternoon at, and again Sunday afternoon at 2. The countdown will begin this Saturday afternoon at 2, and again Sunday afternoon at 2, right here on WDHP-FM, your favorite music radio. Oh, f*** it.
Well, right. You're right.
Bullshit. Your favorite music. No, your favorite music radio. FM, your favorite music radio. That's the way it's got to be read. Let's do it again. Oh, f*** it. The countdown will begin this morning at 9, right here on WMNS 13. God damn, what a call letter. The countdown will begin this afternoon at 1, right here on the entertaining 1410 WHLN. That sucks.
Yeah, somebody question.
WKRN. The countdown will begin this Sunday afternoon at 2, right here on WKRM 1340, where we're getting involved with you. Where we are getting involved with you. Is that the way I'm saying? Right here on WKRM 1340, where we're getting involved with you. The countdown will begin this afternoon at 2, right here on WKRM 1340, where we're getting involved with you.
Go ahead and tell them again, just saying WKRM 1340.
Oh, fuck. Saturday morning at 9, and again Sunday morning at 9, right here on Maine's most listened to radio station, I'm not going to say all that shit. How do I know they're the most listened to station?
I'll take your word for it.
Right here on Center County's most popular radio station, WRSC, Radio 1390. Hey, what the fuck am I doing? Tromo's inside the fucking game? Immediately following the Trailblazer game on... You're listening to American Top 40 on QT, WQTW, La Trobe. It's getting set for Westmoreland County. What the fuck does that mean?
What kind of, you know, what are my choices for bread? And she said, white wheat sourdough English muffin bagel.
White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel.
White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. And clearly she had it hold down to like a whole David Mamet-esque, like, flow. White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. What are my choices for bread? White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. What are my choices for bread? White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. What are my choices for bread? White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. What are my choices for bread? White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel.
White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel.
White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. What are my choices for bread? White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. What are my choices for bread? White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. What are my choices for bread? White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel. What are my choices for bread? White wheat sourdough English muffin bagel.
Jesus.
I don't mean that in the sexy way. I mean, I do, but also in the bread way. Biscuits are universal, Don. Everybody loves them. You bring me a man who doesn't love biscuits, and I will bring you a man who is not a man at all.
Biscuits are pretty manly, aren't they?
Biscuits are for everybody. Biscuits aren't for men, women. They're not for Jew nor Gentile. They're not for the gay, the straight. They're not for people in the middle, the upper, the lower classes, or anywhere in between. Biscuits are for all.
Although biscuits and gravy seems like a predominantly male dish.
No, that's for hicks. No, that's just for, that's like gravied eggs. That's just for rubes, Don. All right. Hello. It is 28 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of April in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for drawing near that ye might be amused on this Friday. It is Friday, and welcome to day 12. We are here high above the Milkpacking District in the heart of glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. The plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Amherst News Network, from where all good things derived. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm fine.
Are you?
I am. I'm trying to figure out a story.
What do you mean?
Well, I was just reading the story that I got off of the intrawebs, and I'm just trying to figure it out.
Make heads or tails of it.
Yeah, because it's one of these. I mean, I'll read it later, and maybe you can help me figure it out. But
that seems unlikely.
I have questions. There are things in the story that there seems to be a bit of a back and forth that doesn't really make any sense. A couple of different things are in contention in my brain meats.
So there are elements of the story that seem inconsistent with one another.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
They're mutually exclusive.
Yes.
Right. Speaking of mutual exclusivity, somebody says, hey, about that guy who called you trashy queers yesterday, didn't he hear you offer Don your penis? I guess maybe not. He might not have been privy to that exchange.
Maybe he considered us queers in the more political sense, rather than the literal, homosexual slur sense.
What do you mean in the political sense? Like we're Whigs?
Meaning that we're sexually wacky. We're progressive. We're fluid.
We're
our sexuality.
We're sexually wacky. Does that mean we just have sex with red buttons? Or
like maybe, you know, maybe you would offer me
involved.
Your penis. And I actually, you know, could do that, but
and then it would turn into a bouquet of flowers.
Well, I have a buzz cut and wear sensible shoes.
I think we're on two totally different tips here in terms of the word wacky. I was thinking I'd offer you my penis and then it would be a joy buzzer.
Yeah.
You go, I'd love that. You know, and I'd go, and then it would, and then I would squirt water from my lapel, but not anything from anywhere else.
Or you'd offer me your penis, and I'd put my hand out to take it, and then I would draw my hand back at the last minute.
Or,
like faking you with the handshake.
Or I would offer you my penis, which I seem to do now every few seconds.
Yeah.
I would offer you my penis, and then you grab a hold of it, but then it would just come off because it was like a dummy penis.
Or you would pull out your penis and it would go bang and a flag would come out the end.
Or it would just shoot snakes everywhere. Worst money shot ever.
Oh God. Well, spiders would be worse.
Don't think about that. All right. We just figured we'd alienate everybody right out of the gate today. Just before we did anything else, before we accomplished one other single item on our list, we would just, you know, if you were going to get to the turning off the radio and disgust part of the show, we just do that up top here. Just save you all the time and trouble. Just make it a more efficient use of your day. Somebody says, but just last hour, Dom was browbeating you into gay sex. It doesn't make any sense. Well, we're pansexual, sir.
Because I'm a trashy queer.
No, we're a big tent here. We accommodate all preferences and orientations. All right, thank you for joining us. If you would like to be part of today's program telephonically, maybe to call up and talk about, you know, snow globes or how you can't use the website or whatever, it's 503-505-6964 for your comments, questions, observations, clarifications, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, recipes, thoughts on biscuits, whatever it is you might have. It's 503-505-6964. You can also text via the website or you can go to Skype and contact us via Skype. It's Rick Emerson Show, all one word. That is Rick Emerson Show. That's your username at Skype. Or you can just think really hard. Maybe it'll transmit itself into the fillings in our teeth. It's coming up today. We got your penis watch, clown watch. The penis watch just seems redundant. It seems almost incidental at this point. Penis watch, clown watch, hick watch. Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me. Comedy 101 today, talking about the life, work, and career of one Ms. Tracy Ullman. We got that little bit of Star Blazers news coming up here in just a skosh. It's nothing like real major or whatever, but we'll get to, there's a little bit of Star Blazers news to be had. Plus, Don Taylor's working on the following stories for your edification on this Friday.
A woman is arrested for buying a $20 prostitute for her elderly father.
A prostitute?
Well, I started to say hooker, and then
she's full of carbs.
I changed in midstream, and it didn't quite work.
Bronco should totally make a thing called a prostitute. I don't know what it would do, but I mean...
It would be like a lady that would come into your kitchen and make spaghetti for you.
Oh, my God. No. Oh, no. It's so obvious to me now. I should have thought of this 5 seconds ago. A prostitute would be like egg beaters, but for pasta. It would be like a substitute pasta dish that was for the gluten intolerant.
Prostitute.
What's that? Can't digest pasta or gluten? Try prostitute. Oh, my God. That's brilliant.
Write that down.
Okay.
Add that to the list.
Here's the thing. And when I say brilliant, I don't mean stupid the way that I usually do. I mean, that's actually...
It's actually
a good idea.
Yeah.
All right. Prostitute.
Prostitute.
All right.
That's one of those sort of semi-unfortunate names that I adore. Like, on 30 Rock, the character of Jenna was pushing her exercise program, which she called Genocide.
That's fantastic.
I just did not see what the problem was. So anyway, yes, a woman is arrested for buying a $20 hooker for her elderly father. A copperhead snake bites a guy at Walmart. And an overprotected goose terrorizes city employees.
Hey, what is the actress's name who plays Jenna?
Jane Krasinski.
Krasinski, is that her name? Is she the chick? I got two things to say. I got a question and a comment about her. Which do you want to hear first?
Comment.
Larry, I have a question and a comment. I'll give you the comment and the question off the air. Here's the comment. The next time you look at Jane Krasinski on 30 Rock, here's something to think about, and then you will realize instinctively, you will know that this is true. You will never be able to look at her the same way again once I tell you this. It's like, again, it's like finding out that somebody kind of looks like one of their parents. You go, oh, my God.
Or that you look like
Miambialik. Did you say, well, we'll get to that here in a second. Hold on, Miambialik. That's the first time I've ever written that down, Miambialik. Did I ever tell you that never mind. This 60-year-old woman named Miriam, who looked a lot like Liza Minnelli, tried to seduce me one time.
Old Liza or
she looked like Liza at that age.
Liza.
She was like a 50-something woman, looked like Liza Minnelli as a 50-something woman, totally tried to seduce me one time. She was a sales chick, totally, this is not here, this is years ago, tried to seduce me on the way to a porn store, which was one of her clients. I don't know if that just put her in the mood or if I was just, such an exquisitely carved hunk of man that she just couldn't hold her feelings in any longer.
Huh.
Anyway,
how exactly did she try to seduce you? What were her moves?
I forget exactly, but it was pretty. It was one of those things where
was it like all verbal or did she get touchy?
I think she put her hand on my thigh. We were in the car together. We're driving in her Nissan Maxima to the which is where all the good sex happens to the porn store, and she like put her hand on my thigh and was all like, "So blah 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 blah, you're a man, I'm a woman," and I did the thing of just, you're a great gal, but I know there's really no point to that story, except to say. I don't even really know why I was saying that. That came from somewhere in my head just now. Anyway, comment and a question about Jane Krasinski and 30 Rock. Okay, you're never going to be able to look at her the same way for this. When you look at her, realize this. She is a perfect, and I mean a perfect merger, 50-50. If you were to put them and morph them like a Brundle fly sort of a thing, if you were to merge Jen Lane of Barfly Magazine and Storm Large, she is exactly what would happen if you merged Storm Large and Jen Lane. I mean, exactly. I thought that the first time I ever saw her, and with every passing year, it becomes more and more true. So you just
interesting,
yeah. Anyway, so question: was she the chick in National Lampoon's Vacation that was Randy Quaid's daughter, and where she's like, I'm dating and I French kiss, and the girl says everybody does that, and she says, yeah, but daddy says I'm the best at it.
I remember the character and the line. I have no idea.
Okay, I think that was her, but I'm not entirely sure.
Would be really interesting if it was.
Oh my God, somebody just says she was the hit cousin in Vacation, stirring Kool-Aid with her hand.
Oh wow.
Okay, yeah, that's totally her. She's on the swing set with what's her name.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
There you go.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Rick Rutherford.
All right.
So today, Penis Watch, Clown Watch, Chick Watch, all of those things.
Speaking of Rick Rutherford, I want to thank him, by the way. I am still making my way through, because I don't drink very much or very often. I'm still making my way through a bottle of whiskey that he brought me here at the office, which it was a bottle of super cheap whiskey. The brand is called like R&R, which stands for like rich and royal or rich and something.
Retching.
Or something like that. And he had crossed out the words and then written by the big R's, Rick Rutherford. So apparently the reason he gave me that particular brand of cheap whiskey was just so that he could put his name on the label.
Excellent. Well done.
So now every time I have a shot of cheap Canadian whiskey, I think of him.
You think of it. Well, you know, I mean, so it sounds like it's a mission accomplished for everybody. That is a win on all ends kind of proposition.
So that's the thing, listeners. Keep in mind, if you want me to think of you, bring me booze and write your name on the label. And I'm not kidding.
So tell me about Mia Bialik.
Well, I was watching, just this morning, I was watching the Big Bang Theory episode
from
this week.
I have never seen that show.
It's quite funny. It really is. I mean, as far as mainstream...
Is that Chuck Lorre?
Sitcom stuff goes, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I've never seen it.
No, it's often really, really funny. It's very geeky and very geek-centric, but follows all of the standard sitcom,
right.
you know, beats. But, yeah, Mia Bialik joined the cast, I think, last year. As a friend of the one character Sheldon, and she's his platonic female friend, and she plays this sort of Asperger-y, super brilliant scientist who's sort of a female counterpart to Sheldon in that, you know, she doesn't really like the sex and she doesn't understand, you know, pop culture references,
right.
and basic human interactions.
She's a nerd.
Yes, and with just very socially awkward.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I watched this episode last night, and this was the first time I'd seen the show since you mentioned that she looks like you.
Yes, it's true. Is it still true?
Yes, it is. Oh, it's got it so true. Except that she just has long, straight girl hair.
Yeah. Well, that was the case on Blossom, too. It was often like a Paddington hat.
And then last night was a very special episode because she got drunk and was flirting with Sheldon. And then it was extra weird for me.
Because it was like me in a dress flirting with a guy on a TV show. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
wonderful.
You in a wig and a big ugly sweater flirting with a guy.
So you think I'm pretty? That's wonderful. I'll have to see. I haven't seen a picture of her since she graduated from college.
I think she looks more like you now
than she did then.
When she was on Blossom.
You know what somebody should do is somebody should try to, if only, see, there's not that many pictures of me. You can do a timeline of like when the streams crossed, you know, like me at 14, her at 14, me at 20, her at 20, me at 25, her at 20. And then just see like at what ages, you know, she looked the most like me.
Also, she wears glasses as this character, which makes it even more.
But you see my thing about how, like, I guess it's mildly amusing for me. I can make hay from that. But it's really unfortunate for her. That's just a thing. But it is. But in a way, it's kind of impressive, too. Impressive because it's sort of, you got to say, like, if a chick who looks like me can get work on television. I mean, you know, if you're a girl and you look like me and you can get work in Hollywood, good for you. Because that is a Sisyphean task. That's Herculean, is what that is. So, well done, Mia Bialik. All right. Let's see. Hold on a second. Am I going to sneeze? I'm not sure. I might sneeze. Wait. No. All right. It is 503-505-6964. So, Big Jim Willie going to join us here in just a few. We got all of the aforementioned things. Oh, and also Don brought me cookies today. So, I'm going to fight off the urge to eat those. I'm going to eat those later on today. I just had a little bit. A little tiny piece of one right now.
I am flattered that even without having any milk with you or anything, you still, like, immediately opened the bag and jammed a hunk of it into your maw.
Little tiny bite. People can get those, by the way, at Big Ass Sandwiches, which is at 3rd and Ash.
Yes,
Third and
Southwest
Ash.
3rd and Ash.
So you can go to Big Ass Sandwiches and get the Big Ass cookie there. So,
and they do have a brand new fresh batch today, made just last night.
Quite wonderful. I strongly recommend that you do that. All right, it is 503-505-6964. Why did I write down this word? Oh, I don't know. Okay, I know what that
Here's
is.
Here's a still from her on Big Bang Theory, by the way.
See, that's so unfortunate. And she also looks like Kermit the Frog there. In the profile, okay, from the front, she's got the me thing going on. Look at her in the profile, though. Think Kermit the Frog.
Yeah.
Think of her going, you know, why are there so many songs about... That's totally...
Yeah.
That's... Boy. I mean...
She is. She's a girl you.
I mean, I don't... look, I'm not trying to pile on because, again, it's, you know... First of all, she's obviously successful in show business to a certain degree. So, like, you know, hey, good for her.
And
also,
she's not unattractive. She's just not... She's not what you would look at... She's not conventional actress pretty.
I mean...
I would not call her pretty, but I would say that she's attractive.
I wouldn't call her pretty.
No, but you know, pretty is a very specific kind of thing.
I don't want to pile on, and I know that there are many, you know, that Hollywood is very, very restrictive and narrow sometimes in what it considers to be attractive. Would you agree with this assessment? I'm not saying she's hideous. Would you agree that she is odd looking?
A
I think she's a little odd.
I mean, her nose is very large.
I think if you saw her on the street, you kind of go, chick's kind of weird looking. I mean, again, I'm not saying she's ugly, but she's a little unorthodox looking.
Oh, yeah.
She's unconventional.
The thing is, pretty, to me, and this is just my use of words, so obviously I'm not the expert on all. This is my personal interior dictionary. But pretty, to me, is sort of, you know, pretty and beautiful are both kind of the counterpart to handsome.
A handsome woman, sort of like
it's like what handsome is for a man.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, pretty or beautiful is for a woman usually. And it's like you, for example, are a really good looking, very attractive man.
Oh, now stop.
I would not probably call you handsome.
Well, now I don't understand. So who's handsome? Give me an example. Is Robert Redford handsome? Classic Redford?
Classic Redford is handsome.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you know. Here's the thing.
Mark Harmon, handsome.
I'm going to throw you some adjectives.
Clooney, handsome.
I'm going to throw you some adjectives. You tell me the first guy who comes to mind who matches that descriptor and in their sort of, you know, prime, in their golden age.
Okay.
All right. So I'll just say handsome. First guy.
Clooney.
Hot.
Viggo Mortensen.
Good looking.
Good looking. I'm just kind of scanning my brain pan now. Good looking.
Well, we'll skip ahead.
Okay.
Cute.
Elijah Wood.
Sexy.
Well, for me, Alan Rickman. But,
okay,
you
no,
know.
Fair enough.
Also, the guy who played Sawyer on Lost.
Yeah, no,
which also handsome also applies there.
And attractive.
Pretty much, I would have to say almost anyone that you see on television or in movies.
Okay.
People who are photogenic are by nature attractive.
So, somebody's asking me to toss you the word fugly.
Fugly. Steve Buscemi.
Wow, really?
Well.
Now, is that ugly pretty, though? Like Sandra Bernhardt?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I would call him attractive because his sheer first force of personality ends up making him an attractive person.
Not physically, not aesthetically.
But attractive. No, not aesthetically attractive. You know,
he's hot because he's got the great because of who he is and the way he is.
Yeah. George Thorogood is fugly.
yes, he is. He's also Francis the Talking Mule, by the way, if you look really, really closely. All right, okay. No, fair enough. By the way, and I did think about this when I said it. It was sort of half joke, half not. When I said that she's sort of unorthodox, I realized that she is, in fact, an Orthodox Jew. So there's a little bit of a...
Ba-dum.
See what I did there?
Yes.
All right. Like comedy, it worked. All right. Because I'm with you on that. We'll talk about this when Big Jim gets in the studio, because I've said for the longest time that there are girls who are hot, beautiful, sexy, attractive, good-looking, gorgeous, stunning, cute. But it's like the one that is not like any of the others is sexy. Because that's the one that has nothing to do with...
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to do with your looks. Chicks can be sexy. Now, maybe they're also beautiful or hot or whatever, but chicks can be sexy without actually looking sort of, you know...
Yeah. Well, as an example of that, there was a guy I met that I was considering whether or not to get involved with because I was working with him to a degree. I had taken a contract job with him, so temporarily he was my employer, and I was going to a sort of a public event, and he was going to be there.
A contract job.
Yeah, I was. He hired me to help.
Was this laying pipe?
Well, later it was.
Right.
No, at first it was. He hired me to help plan the menu and set up a kitchen for a restaurant that he was setting up. And I told this friend of mine, he was going to go with me to this event that the fellow was going to be at. And I said, I was like, oh, this guy's going to be there. I said, and he is so totally my type. And so he sees the guy and he goes, who is just like kind of a big bear of a guy with a huge nose and a high forehead, you know, and stuff. And my friend goes, that guy? You said he was good looking. And I said, no, I didn't. I said he was my type. There's a difference.
The way you describe it, he's just a huge bear of a guy with a big nose and what was the other thing?
Dark hair, high forehead.
Yeah.
I got this thing for the... There's this whole set of facial features that I just find appealing. The whole...
It's like you're just dating Gru the Wanderer.
Alan Rickman, kind of, you know, David Duchovny, you know, kind of a thing with like the Seth Meyer kind of guys with high foreheads and big noses.
The bear of a guy thing seems different.
Well,
though.
I think it comes partly from having daddy issues and also from being a chubby chick.
Is a physically imposing man?
I like physically large
guys. Because Patrick's
guys.
A tall man.
Yeah.
He's a very tall man.
Yeah.
And so I could say you like men of substance in some way.
Well, also, and here we're going to get... You can tell me if this is a little bit too much TMI.
Seriously, I just don't care. I don't even...
In one of Carrie Fisher's books, she opined that there were two kinds of men. There were daddy men and sibling men. And that she said she was attracted to sibling men. And I realized that I actually had two different distinct types of men that I would go out with. Some of them were daddy men. And the daddy men were like the big nose and the deep voice and the high forehead. And they were physically kind of on the large side. They were usually like 6 foot tall or taller. And then there was this other type of guy that I would go out with sometimes that were, I would think of them as sibling men, who were average height, sometimes even a little on the short side, did not have the big nose or the deep voice, and generally tended to be just a little bit dim, but were good for sex.
Yes, well, that's often the case.
Yes. So.
Oh, no, I can see that. I never really thought about that. So does that? I wonder if that's the same for guys, if they're like sibling chicks and mother chicks.
Probably, yeah.
All right. No, I can. No, I'm just kind of going through. I could see that. No, all right, I have to file that away for further thought later on. I don't really know that I can. That might take more processor power than I currently yeah. present. That would explain why there was this chunk of my life where I dated nothing but older, sometimes substantially older women. So I guess maybe that might.
Yeah.
You know. Plus they were all divorced they were just divorced and just like, you know, and just horned up. So, you know, there was that.
Yeah, there is. I mean, that's just a great pond to fish from.
Divorced,
I think,
chicks,
if you're a guy.
Really. No, that really is like the recently divorced and embittered woman.
Yeah.
Especially if she's like late 30s, early 40s. And here's the other thing. Here's a little bonus, just a little for my peeps out there. If you get the recently divorced chick who has the kid that is just leaving the house, that is just moving off to college. So it's like, you know, 20 years of stifling, you know, sort of unhappy, smothering existence. It's like a thing. It's like, I don't know what it's like. It's like something. It's like an analogy that is eluding me at the moment.
And honestly, the opposite does not really work for women.
Oh, no. You don't want to date a recently divorced guy.
A recently divorced guy is just bitter and angry and depressed and doesn't have any money and doesn't own any decent furniture.
It's just like dating an angry hobo whose house is filled with IKEA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
No, you don't want to do that. All right.
He's got like a futon and his laptop is on a cardboard box.
Talks about his ex-wife, refers to her as the bitch.
Yeah.
You don't want to date that guy. All right. It is, can I even tell, well, okay, let me just tell you about this. Here's another thing. I'll just say this. I'll just say this one other thing. Women probably don't have this. This is a thing that I think happens to guys. I feel like Jim really ought to be in the studio for these conversations. I wonder if he's actually... Jim, if you're listening or if you're in the kitchen on the phone, you could actually just... If you're listening to this program, you could actually just come in now.
I could go take a look.
Or you see if he's here. I don't know why I feel... I guess it's just like the porn thing. I feel like he ought to be in the room for these conversations. Like, otherwise, he's just sort of... he's actually not... That's fine. Well, we'll just get this done and then we'll move on. I don't think this happens to... I don't think this happens to women, but it does happen to men. I don't. Maybe it does happen to chicks. Where you look back, like with the wisdom of hindsight, and you realize that some night that you there was some specific night or event or meetup or date or some evening that happened, and you look back at it and you realize, in retrospect, there was this thing, there was some sort of attempt or something that was being set up, and you were just not aware of it. Like, something was being attempted, and you didn't really see it at the time for what it was.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like people are looking and go, oh, God, so that night that I see it now.
Even worse, I've actually had guys just tell me that. I was so into you. And I'm like, well, why didn't you, like, say anything? Well, I was always, like, hanging around and asking if you wanted to do stuff. And I'm like, But you never actually asked me, you know, out or...
No, see, I think we're talking about different kinds of... Okay.
Oh, so, you're thinking about the almost having sex?
Well, no. Nah, see, no, I don't want to talk
about that. Because that, you know, that's happened to me, so...
Well, but I think, but see, I think it's not just the almost having sex. I think it's if you're looking back and realizing that night he was trying to get you and your sister into bed at the same time.
Oh, that kind of thing,
where you look and you go, well, there was some machination, there was some maneuvering being done, and you just were in the middle of the situation and didn't see it at all. You totally did not, you didn't recognize it. Here's the only reason. The only reason I bring this up is, so I mentioned that it dated women sometimes who were much older than I was, and that was, so I was, with this particular situation, I was 21, and I think, and I saw her off and on for like a year and a half or so, and I think she was 43, 44, something like that. But again, divorced, daughter who I think had just turned 18, was just getting, I think when I started seeing her, I think the daughter was actually just getting ready to pack her stuff and leave. And so, but it was, you know, and just had all of the attributes and hallmarks of you know, the recently freed woman. But I swear to God, and this is not just look. And I'm
no Clooney,
as Butthead once said, Beavis. I'm no Don Johnson or nothing. But yeah, so I'm no Casanova or anything, you know. And I recognize that. But in retrospect, there's this one evening. It seems very, very obvious to me. I would bet you my bottom dollar when I look at it. There was this one night that I went over to her house because she'd called me, or I think it was before email or whatever. She called me and she's like, "Well, do you want to come over and you know, get together?" And you know, and that's it's a very surface kind of relationship. So I know what that means. She's like, "Do you want to come over?" I'm like, "Yes, I do. I'm an able-bodied American male. I will get in my automobile, which I own, and I will drive to your home, and we will have sexual congress." And so I get her.
You know, talking like that, it's a wonder you didn't get laid even more.
Let me apply my powdered wig, m'lady, and find my ablest steed.
Let the intercourse begin.
Anyway, so I go over to her house, and it was her and then these two similarly aged girlfriends of hers. And this has come to me in stages. At the time, it just seemed... I don't even know that it seemed weird. At the time, I guess I was just sort of, you know... I don't know. I think at the time I was just sort of like in this thing of like looking at the clock and just like waiting for the friends to leave so she and I could like, you know, could do what needed to be done. And her friends were there and they'd been drinking and they were obviously having some like girl chat evening, you know, and it was like a first wives club kind of thing. Like they were all like mid to late 30s. I think two of them were, she and one of the other chicks were divorced, and I think the other one sort of was like an unhappily married, because there was a lot of like, you know, bitching about her man and how he didn't get the job done like anywhere. Anyway, and so and I'm just sitting on the couch, just kind of going, "Yeah, that's great," you know, and just like waiting for the girlfriends to leave so that, you know, everything can sort of, so that the business can be had, so the rubber can meet the road, as it were.
And really, really, what they were doing is they were hoping you would go, "Well, little lady, I might be able to take care of that problem for you."
Well, you know, here's the thing: is like as the evening went on, the discussions did get, and I mean, you know, partially this is because they were drunk, and I think partially because they were like late 30-something women, and you know, and I think it reached that point where it's like whether it's the biological clock or whether it's just that they were. They were sort of at that period where they realized they were just married to some tool user, you know, and they were, you know, thinking about the life on which they had, the life that they had missed. But the conversation just got like really, really, really like very sort of awkwardly sexual. Not even awkwardly sexual, just got very sexual, to where at one point one of the girlfriends, who I think had maybe had a little work done or was considering having a little work done, actually was like asking one of the other girlfriends to, you know, to give her bosoms a feel. And to tell her if she thought that they needed to be augmented. And it was like, and it's like right in front, like closer to me than you are now. I mean, literally like a foot in front of me. And so it's like the girl that I'm sort of seeing, the woman I'm seeing, she's kind of sitting, I don't know, kind of where you are. So here's, think about it this way. And some people have ever seen the studio, you know this. So the girl I'm dating is kind of sitting where you are.
I'm about 4 feet away from you.
Yeah, the two girlfriends are sitting on either side, but where the guest is, mm-hmm. like between us, so like maybe 2 feet away. And at one point, literally, they're just like kind of doing this groping of each other. And it was all very weird, and I thought it was kind of strange at the time. And the first thing, the first conclusion I came to is that the older woman that I was dating had brought me over to sort of show me off. And again, not that I'm like some big prize or whatever, but it's like, you know, they're, you know, whatever, and I'm some 21-year-old
guy.
Look,
I got me one of these.
Look at this young buck who I've obtained. So I thought that maybe she was like trying to show off that she'd gotten this like younger guy that she was hooking up with. But it's like looking back on it in retrospect, I am almost certain that even if they were not all on the same page, I am almost certain that the woman that I was seeing was trying to get some sort of weird, like, full-on round-the-room sexing going on. Whether that was because of me or whether that was because of the other women or whether there was one of the other women who had, like, who had seen me and expressed interest in me at some point, I think somebody was trying to set up a little something weird there. And it's like, really, I know that most guys want a time machine so they can go back and, I don't know, talk with Jesus or, you know, be there to see what happened to Amelia Earhart or whatever. I really just want to go back and ask her, like, what was up with that? Like, I just, you know, and just say, like, hey, so that whole night that I was over here and it was, like, your friends, like, you know, like, Helen and Sissy. Like, what was that? Was that, like, a little four-handed sex you were trying to get going there? Or please? I just want to know. Like, yeah. That's my thing. It's, like, it just sort of bugs me that I don't know. And, again, I have no illusions about my own sexual allure or whatever. But I do think that there was a little something she was trying to put together there. And it's just, but you know, here's the frustrating thing about that, is that I'll just never know. That is the thing that will haunt me until the day I die. Also, I think she's dead now. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
All right.
That is weird when people you've slept with are dead, isn't it? When you know that?
Yeah, they're probably very aged.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she's 22 years older than I am. So she's what, 60 now? Okay, so that's just, I mean, that's not that weird, but that's verging on weird.
Yeah.
That somebody I've slept with is 60.
Especially if it turned out she was one of those women that sort of, you know, aged sort of slightly prematurely.
Yeah.
So if you bumped into her sometime, she had, like, gray hair and was all granny looking.
Well, she was, I mean, here's the thing. She looked older than her years anyway. I mean, she was 43. Now, assuming that was how old she really was, she looked older than 43.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know what was going on with her, but she looked like she was trending toward 50. So, all right. There's no real point to that story either. Okay. Hello.
You really are a man with wide and varied tastes in women, aren't you?
I really, this is not just me, I think this is men, especially at a certain point in your life. I think it's really that, George, we're very non-judgmental, you know? I don't think we're, I think as much as men, I think there's an unfair, I think men get an unfair rap sometimes because we get criticized for being too lookist, for placing too much importance on appearance and on the way a woman looks or her measurements or her, you know, her height or her weight or her cup size or her hair or whatever. And I think really, for a lot of guys, it's like, well, sure, why not? Let's go for it. You know, this is what's available. As Bill Maher once said about the era of Twiggy, you know, it's not like men really wanted girls who looked like Twiggy. It was just sort of like you go, well, this is the new model for this year. I guess this is what we're effing this year. It looks like this, but you know, who knows? We'll see what next year. But this year it's this. Let's.
It's like I had read the opinion not too long ago, a man explaining that, you know, women, particularly women that do not have any kind of weight issues per se, women worrying excessively about every little bulge and bump and problem on their body. And it's when you, ladies, you got to understand, when you get naked with a guy, he is not looking at, like, everybody. He's just going, naked girl.
Totally.
That's it. It's just something in their brain sort of skitzes out and just goes, naked.
No,
and that's all they see.
No, and you know, and the other thing is, it's like, also, I mean, this sounds really crass, but the other thing is, it's such a totally false standard for determining if a woman is attractive or not. And by that, I don't mean that it's like a societal subjective thing, and that it's, you know, and that it's based on misogyny or based on weird, based on social contrarianism. I mean, it is all those things, but when I say it's based on a false standard, I mean, you'll hear things like, you know, you hear things like, well, you know, well, don't, you know, clothes just look so much better on somebody of, like, insert body type, which, again, is, like, immaterial for the purposes of, you know, like, if you're going to be getting the sexing. Or, you know, well, I mean, you know, look, there's this, you know who can be really, really horrible about this, too, is of course, other women. Women who were of a certain body type and then either lost or gained a lot of weight, and then suddenly they become very, very judgmental about whatever the other body type is. But I had this woman, she was trying to tell me one time, she was one of those, you know, like, why would a guy want a fat chick, girls? And I just kept saying, like, I don't want a chick who's all pointy and, you know, I don't want to hump a cheese grater. There's no appeal to me at all there. And she said, well, okay, look at those two girls. She, like, picked out some girls that were on the street. She's like, look at, the thin girl and the fat girl. She's like, you know, which one of those girls is really, really going to look better, you know, just standing there naked? And which is a totally, false standard. It's a complete red herring. Because here's the thing. No one looks good standing there absolutely naked.
Not
no one.
Really, no.
Skinny chicks, skinny guys, fat guys, fat chicks. Nobody looks good. There's like half of 1% of the population that looks good. It's like standing there in the dressing room and they got the three-panel mirror and the fluorescent light, and you just every pockmark and mole and bump and blister and scab and bruise and bulge you've got, you're just like, oh God, I look hideous. Everybody looks hideous there.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons we have sex laying down and very close together.
That's the other thing, is that, you know, here's, again, just in a physiological sense. I'm sorry for this. Chicks on their back look a whole lot different than chicks standing up. And you know what I'm talking about. So, I mean, there's just, you know.
On Soap. I remember when I was a kid on the TV show Soap, they actually talked about that. The ladies of the show were in the kitchen talking about the laying on your back versus being on top, which was very racy for when Soap was on. They were talking about this. And the one character was saying that she had no idea what she was talking about. And Katherine Helmand was saying, oh, no, no, you look so much better. Well, look at this. And she's like pulling the skin back on her face going, now, how good does that look? And they're like, doing okay. Okay, now get. And then she got up on the table and was crouching on the table over top of her and said, okay, look at me now. And she looked at her and went, oh, my God.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, I'm glad we're all on the same page. Let's never talk about this ever again. All right. By the way, Jenny weighs in and says, when I was younger, I could find something attractive about any man. If he could fog a mirror, I found him attractive.
Well done.
I like Jenny.
Jenny
and I seem to have had a similar dating history.
I do as well.
Is he pleasant and he doesn't smell terrible and he's actually talking to me? Okay, he's got a shot.
I will say, when you said that I had a broad range, or when I had a wide variety of things that I found attractive, or types that I had, I do have a couple specific types, but those are not deal breakers, you know, for the most part. I mean, I think guys, like women, I think we have preferences.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, but you have a preference for dinner, too. But I mean, hey, you know.
Well, I have my big nose fetish, but that doesn't mean the only men I find attractive are guys with big noses. That's just that thing sort of like some guys are about big boobs or something, that they just kind of go, oh, look at that.
Right.
You know, I'm like that about guys with big noses. But if you get somebody in here like, say, Peter Carlin, you know, I have a huge crush on
Peter Carlin.
I have a huge crush on Peter Carlin, who is a handsome, I would call him handsome.
Yes.
He is a handsome man.
He's an attractive man.
But he's also just hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing that is, for a lot of women, that's really the thing, is if a guy is smart and can make you laugh. That's the deal breaker right there. You could be not terribly physically attractive, but if you're witty and you're quick and you can make a woman laugh, you know, you're halfway there.
Well, it's like Kim Morgan complained to me one time. She wrote that piece for Salon about Robert Mitchum, about barrel-chested guys. And she said that the worst part about that was that for the next few weeks, it was like the only guys who would hit on her, you know, were like these big sort of beefy construction worker guys, you know, guys who sort of knew her or, you know, whatever. And it's like she would go, or friends would introduce her to guys who looked like that because they thought that was like her only type or whatever. So it is, I think it is the same. It is that, you know, again, you have preferences. As a friend of mine once said, it's sort of like, you know, it is like eating. You know, you have a favorite restaurant, but at 3 a.m., you know, the only thing open is 7-Eleven. Not a lot of variety, but where else are you going to go? There's just nothing else available.
Yeah. You ask me what I want for my birthday dinner, I'll say, you know, pot roast. But, you know, if all that's available and I'm starving is a chicken sandwich from McDonald's, I'll probably eat that.
That's what I'm talking about. Final note on this, that I don't know that I'm alone in this when it comes to guys, but I think this is much more common for women than for men. A thing that will actually make chicks hotter to me is if they have some, if they're really, really talented at something. And that usually is a thing that chicks have for guys, where it's like, you know, he just looks like some schlub, some nebbish. But if he can, you know, a guy who can play guitar, if he can get on, if he's in a band, if he sings. There was this girl, I won't name her, but it doesn't really matter because it was a long time ago. But there was this girl who was kind of odd looking. Again, you know, not horrible, but I mean, you know, not much of a looker. You'd kind of see her in the office and go, do you have any sisters at home? Do they look like you? Or, you know, but she was in a band and she did a lot of, you know, some solo performing. And she just had, and it was like, I was at some sort of, thing. And she got up on stage to sing, and I'd seen her before. She was like sitting down with her guitar, like tuning or something. And I'm like, there's a chick. She looks kind of odd. She had sort of this weird beaky owl kind of a thing going on with her face. But then she got up on stage and she started singing, and it was like she just had the most amazing voice. She just had this voice. I don't say the voice of an angel, but it was this very, very great, like warm, sort of siren-y kind of voice. And then she wrote the most amazing songs, and she was immediately hot from that point on. So there are things. I mean, that's not, you know. So the moral is, however you're born, whatever it is you look like, there are things you can do to tilt the table in your favor.
That's right.
That's all I'm saying. It's like, you know, don't you have to wash your hands of the whole deal just because you got like a third arm or something.
Yes.
And you can fix that. You can compensate for that.
Confidence and if not talent, then just your confidence can do a lot as well.
It is. Well, it's like you've seen that movie, a movie with which I have problems. And then we really honestly have to break and have it, Jim, and even though we've done nothing, which kind of seems to be our leitmotif lately. But a movie with which I have a lot of problems because it emasculates itself in the final act, as a lot of rom-coms do. But that movie, The Tao of Steve, with Donal Logue.
Oh yeah, okay.
Where he has the three stage process for getting any woman, which is to be desireless, which is to act like you don't care if she Fs you or not, you know. And don't just act like you don't care. He's like, honestly, don't care. Work yourself into this Jedi state where you honestly don't care if she puts out or not, and you are totally indifferent to her romantic ministrations. The second thing is to be excellent, which is to be skilled at something in her presence. Fixing a computer, playing a song, working on the car, making a painting. Doesn't matter. Be good at something and make sure that she sees you being good at something. And then just be gone. So it's to like, don't have any desire in effing her. Make sure she knows you're good at something, and then just don't be around. And then she'll call you. And I mean, in a sort of like Ritz Small kind of a way, that is effective to some degree.
And Donald Logue, by the way, a guy that you would not look at and think of as a particularly handsome man. And I know a lot of women who just think he's red hot.
Oh yeah, no, it's true. All right. Well, on that note, so we got news, we got stuff, but we should probably just we should let everybody pee.
Yeah, so. Including me.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So Don's going to go pee. You can all do that as well.
We'll bring
in
the sexy, sexy Big Jim Willig.
Yes. Yes, he is. He's a barrel of man.
He is.
And a barrel of laughs
he
at
is.
The same time.
He's a man who is talented.
Well, oh, you know, yes, at the comedy.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
Okay.
I wouldn't know about the other thing.
Back after this, it is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All my life I've been searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close. Closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long, I dream of the day. When it comes around and it's taken away, leaves me with the feeling that I feel the most. Feel it come to life when I see your ghost. searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close. Closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long, I'm dreaming of the day. When it comes around and it's taken away, leaves me with the feeling that I feel the most. Feel it come to life when I see your ghost. Then I'm done, done, on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done. Done, and I'm on to the next one, done.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Fascist regime. It made you a moron.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
The Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Still to come today, well, I guess everything. Clown Watch, Chick Watch, Penis Watch, maybe. Also, Mr. Big Jim Willig joining us in the studio, I don't know, like now-ish, I guess. Hello,
there
Mr.
He
Big
is.
Jim Willig.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Not bad.
Is that his theme music?
It is. This is this Primus?
This is Primus, the Bastards theme, so. Here they come.
This kind of sounds like you.
I know. This is, and the thing is, I'm a Primus fanatic. I think Les Claypool. If they say Clapton is God, God's gonna need a bass player, and that would be Les Claypool.
This is you as like a pro wrestler as you're entering the ring, sort of, you know, like walking, to, you know, high fiving the fans on either side while pyro rains down.
Thanks, brother, for coming out. I appreciate the support.
Exactly.
My husband loves Primus.
Oh,
he gets positively giddy.
There are no casual Primus fans.
No.
Yeah, I've noticed that. They're just like, because I really don't really care for them one way or the other. I have to admit, it's just not the kind of thing I find
and
that appealing.
But you're dead.
I know, but Patrick is just like, it's like the McRib is back anytime. Like there's, you know, Primus, you know, just pops up.
I will actually say that I because we deal in honesty here. I'll actually say I don't really care for Primus. I am not a All right. Primus fan. I'm just saying, you know,
me, I'm dead to you.
I'm just like, well, I'm glad to see that you're not alone in the boat that will be now leaving the island. Jim, the Isle of Jim has banished two more.
I'm much less aggro about it than I used to be. I used to just get. I have reached a point where I'm zen with my own music taste and the music taste of people around me. And if people make fun of what I listen to, I just kind of go, well, whatever. And if people are listening to something that I don't really care for, that I think is bad, I just kind of go,
let me ask you this then: do you think the Dynasty album is a good album?
You trying to start something?
Is
that what that's
Big
about?
Jim is waiting in the ring, brother.
Why you got to go right to Dynasty? Why you got to do that? Why is it got to be like that?
I'm just.
I thought we had a relationship.
Wait,
what's
the one with the big pig face on the cover?
That's pork soda. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which I know because I had to play that when I was a rock and roll DJ.
Is that where the angst comes from?
A lot of it is that it was true that I was a rock DJ through up until my last year that I was a rock DJ was 94. I was a because that was the year that I did my first talk radio show, and everything else was just sort of killing time. Like everything else was just sort of like ladder climbing. You know, it was just one rung after the other, like country radio and oldies radio and rock radio. It was all because I eventually wanted to do talk, but that was a thing you just couldn't. You know, much like now, you just couldn't walk in and get a talk gig. So the last year that I did a rock radio was 1994. So I had it was like all the way through the goddamn Lollapalooza era. I am not with the whole alternative nation era, and I just don't. Over the years, there's certain elements of that music that I've learned to appreciate. I mean, and like some of the so-called like Seattle scene, like I've gotten past a lot of the instant dislike I had for a lot of that music. But there's certain things that I just had to play over and over and goddamn mother effing over, over, over. And Primus is one of those things. Primus, Tool, goddamn Rage Against the Machine, goddamn Candlebox.
Okay, you're throwing Candlebox in a very good area with some other good bands.
I'm just saying, those are just the bands that leap off the page for me when I think about like 1992, 1993, 1994. And here's the other thing, is that around that time, and this has happened to me twice, where I had a roommate who had like really bizarre, mercurial music taste, except that's not even the way to put it, it's just fractured taste. I talked about this guy I lived with in Salt Lake, and the only things he really listened to, he just listened to... It was essentially just ska, except for Rush, because that had been grandfathered in from before he discovered ska. So he held that over. So it was just like nothing but Temples of Syrinx and like Mustard Plug over and over. So from his room all the time, it was like this little like plink, plink, plink noise from the ska records and then Geddy Lee's like Donald Duck, Robert Plant strangle happening through the wall. But when I lived in Washington State, I had a roommate and I swear to God, and he was – first of all, I don't understand. There's some sort of a thing – where there's this like trinity of things that guys have to be into. It's like if you are a Primus fan, you must, or at least at that point, had to be also a Tool fan and a Rage Against the Machine fan. Some sort of weird bass-heavy alt-rock continuum in which all three of those things were intertwined.
Yeah. Oh, God, never mind.
Did you say, did you start to say my father when you meant to say my boyfriend?
I meant to say my husband, yes.
Go ahead. You can't unring the bell, just, you know.
My husband's side of the CD shelving has all three of those.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Which is, I don't know why that is, but it just is. If you are into Primus, a Rage Against the Machine album and a Tool album will be found in your collection, which is, I don't know why, but I think it is something to do with the instrumentation and the sort of and those bands, and they're all really talented players. I mean, nobody's going to confuse them with, the Ramones. Yeah. They're obviously very skilled. Les Claypool's a very talented musician, but they all kind of have that acumen in the same way, where it is this weird. It's not hip hop, but it's very rhythmic and very bass oriented in this sort of angular alt kind of way.
We got Maynard and Les Claypool, and the two of them are very, just very odd characters in their own right. I mean, they're very private, so you don't hear a lot of them in like the general news stream. So whenever something does pop up about it, people tend to like dive on it. So you have to sort of like actively pursue knowledge about them. So that's kind of cool with that. And then, of course, on the other end of that coin, you've got Rage Against the Machine, where Zach is just like, he's like a firestorm. Like, everything about him is just like, it's got to be a controversy. It's got to be something huge. So during that time, I can kind of see those two, all those kind of ringed together. Real quick to go back, is there going to be like a music cue every time there's a daddy issue kind of thing?
We should totally do that. Oh, like a father knows best kind of a thing.
Yeah, okay. Right. I'm just wondering.
I'm on it. Good observation.
Coming up more and more.
Yeah, that is a Pandora's box that should never have been opened.
Hold on a second. Father knows. So when I was living in Washington State, I had this roommate who, it was almost just like a sitcom how much our music taste didn't blend. Because I was in this phase where if you were to listen to my record collection, or just at any given time, I was usually listening to either Public Enemy or Brian Wilson records.
Wow!
But then at the same time, it's like all he listened to was Tool, or Primus, or Jimmy Buffett, and he was Jimmy Buffett fanatic.
I would have ended up just killing myself, frankly.
And Jimmy Buffett is one of those guys that over the years I have learned. I'm not like a huge Jimmy Buffett fan, but I've learned to appreciate him, or to scale back my dislike of him, because I've learned that is one of those things, first of all, where I had to stop judging people by their audiences. I had to stop looking at the crowd.
Hard.
Because I used to do that, even after I met Laura, I would just rail on somebody because I didn't like the people who listened to them, like the Deadheads, and it's like, and I still am not a big fan of the Grateful Dead, but it's like, I can look at like American Beauty or Working Man's Dead or something and separate that from just the unwashed pox of a crowd that follows them around.
Fish, for example. Oh, wait, no, that's a bad example.
No, that's the worst example.
Because they suck.
I was saying, I just hate them. And she'd say, why? And I go, well, look at the people who listen to them. And then at one point, I took her to see Korn. And it's like she's looking around going,
she said, pot, kettle.
Remember that thing about disliking a band because the audience is full of freaks?
Yeah.
And it's like,
Jacques.
Anybody who's ever spent time at a Slayer concert knows that you just can't do that. So,
real quick about Slayer, my friend Rick went to go see Slayer recently, and there's like the bus backstage, and all the kids are kind of clamoring for an autograph. And Rick, being the awesome dude that he is just like, everyone's like trying to like get their attention. He's just standing there yelling, "I'm 34 years old!" And it actually got them to stop and be like, "Oh my God, we actually have a fan that's been
that's awesome. That's fantastic."
And it worked, because I forget who it was, but one of the band members came over and he's just like, "Nice to meet you, dude. Do you have anything to sign?" He's like, "No." He's like, "Do you at least have a pen?" He's like, "No."
I can tell you, Slayer just actually, I think it was last weekend, they just played, it was sort of a sister fest to Coachella, and it was the Big Four Fest. And the Big Four, as all classic metal fans know, the Big Four were Anthrax, Megadeth, Metallica, and Slayer. they were considered, at one time anyway, the four like preeminent metal bands on the planet. And obviously, you know, they've all kind of gone different directions, except for Slayer, who are just out there like doing it the same thing. Slayer are like a heavy metal Ramones, where they have just never...
2, 3, 4!
Yeah, I mean, it's like they do what they do, and they do it really well, and they've never felt the need to alter or deviate or change. It's like everything just sounds like Angel of Death, like over and over and over, which is, you know, that's what they do, and God love them. But the big four festival happened, and it's weird and worth noting that I think Slayer at this point has now been putting out records for, well, 1986, so that's, what is that, 25 years?
Yeah.
It's got to be longer than that even, because like Haunting the Chapel or whatever came out, I think, like 82, 81. So Slayer's been putting out records for nearly 30 years, and I can tell you, and they will still take like the paint off the side of your house.
Yeah, they will.
I mean, they are just, and it's great when you, it's like they're like Motorhead in that way, where you hear Motorhead and it's like they will just crush whatever metal band you think is, you know, is preeminent right now.
Yeah.
But point. Why were we just talking about Slayer?
It all started judging with the him crowd coming and the in band. With the
yeah,
Primus
yeah, yeah.
and the thing.
But
the...
yeah, so I've learned to quit judging Jimmy Buffett by his fans. And I think that in an alternate universe, if I came at it fresh, I think I would actually like a lot of what Jimmy Buffett does. Because it's sort of a weird kind of Caribbean kind of alt country in its way. I mean, it's a little toothless, but he writes some, you know, he's written some quality songs. But living with a guy, though, who had – and he had just purchased the box set, Beaches, Bars, Boats, and – Something.
Alliteration.
Yeah, it was. Bosoms. It was like that. It was, you know, and it was like it was, and every disc had like a theme. And this is the All Bars album, and this is the All Beaches album, and it was that, and then just like Primus constantly. And as I finally just had to move, I just couldn't take it anymore. And then it's like I would be at home listening to Pet Sounds, and he would come in and go, "What is this crap?" And it was like I just couldn't. We were going to kill each other, so I just had to get away.
And then you threw the plate of spaghetti at the wall, and
now it's garbage.
It was a strange time. Anywho, so blah da ba ba, your entrance music, Bastards on Parade, blah da blah.
Yeah, so we'll you know, and I can forgive
that was loud.
I can forgive though
the tuna sandwich I had for lunch.
having to play that music over and over and over again. Well,
you worked at KUFO, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah, but the thing was, while everybody else in the studio was rolling their eyes, I'm the one like rocking out and like, yeah, AC/DC again. Excellent.
Well, I guess you'd, and I mean, you know, and you were to KUFO for, now, was that your only radio gig?
That was it, yeah. So, I went from like abject, you know, I was like a comedian / former shoplifter chaser, you know, and then thrust into the limelight.
So it's like you escaped, I think, having the burnout, especially because you worked in a genre that you liked.
Yeah.
You were, you know, you missed having to like play, like being on some goddamn oldies station. Where you're just playing like the Hollies Bus Stop, like over and over and over. And it's just, and you know, and Polk Salad Annie, you know, and just Come On Down to My Boat by Every Mother's Son. And just sitting there on a Sunday morning in Spokane while it rains outside and you're playing Herman's Hermits and just thinking to yourself, I wish I was dead.
Mrs. Brown, you have a lovely revolver in my mouth.
It's just awful. But yeah, so I worked in, and I was not like a huge fan at the time of that kind of Lollapalooza music scene. Anyway, because I was busy, just I was still pissed off that it killed off all my like 80s rock.
Yeah,
you know, I was just, you know, because I was and still is. I'm an unabashed fan of all of it, you know, the Cinderella and Poison and, you know, Motley Crue, and that was so out of fashion at that time. It was so, it just got decimated, and I was carrying such a grudge about the fact that, like, you know, that Soundgarden, you know, who I didn't dislike, I guess, as such, you know, in a vacuum, I didn't dislike them, but I was so angry about the fact that, you know, that like Kurt Cobain came across and it came along and just killed off all my, you know, killed off the Poison records that I wanted
Bastard.
To listen to, yeah, and so I was just, and so I was, you know, it doesn't matter what it sounded like, I was going to be anti it, and it took me a long time, I think, to get past that, and I just became very jaded about the whole thing. So yeah, so that, but unfortunately, so my point, I guess, is that Tool had the misfortune to be lumped into that entire, you know, that entire sort of, which is not their fault. So, all right then, how's life? How are things?
Not bad, actually. Getting some solid bookings. My next gig, believe it or not, will be at the Gresham Applebee's, ladies and gentlemen. That's right.
Please to explain.
No. I think I've said far too much.
I mean, it does seem self-explanatory, but...
There is apparently a Applebee's in Gresham that is like, you know what's missing from the menu? Live entertainment. Sure, why not? So I have like 10 minutes of my squeakiest of cleanest of material that I'll
are
be
they
doing.
Paying?
They're paying $40 and a meal.
Okay, well, there you go.
So, yeah.
Enough said.
Buffalo kickers, and I'll come out tonight, so.
Hey, has anybody done the Buffalo Wings once you come out tonight jingle for a commercial?
I don't think so.
Somebody had to do that.
Yeah.
Totally.
Right, okay.
But so
maybe
yeah,
the prostitutes people could, yes. To get that.
I had this idea. Gluten-free pasta. Prostitute.
Oh, my God. Yes.
See?
I would buy that. I would buy that, like, in bulk.
I'm going to tweet that later on. Yeah.
Speaking of random inventions, I came up with one. Kind of like a panty liner for boxer briefs for guys. Call them boxer blockers. So that basically when you're flatulent, it kind of like masks.
Maybe if you were like leaking or something.
Well, you could throw in like an absorbency crust around the edges.
I wouldn't use the word crust when I'm describing the product.
That's a crust that makes itself, I think.
Yeah.
A self-forming dam, if you will. But no, my friend Don Frost, who has like just epically bad flatulence. Just
really?
Like, really bad. And the thing is, his diet isn't that bad, but he makes these power shakes in the morning that makes it just like, I've seen dogs get up and leave the room like indignantly. Like, how dare you, sir?
So now I'm just picturing, if you've ever seen him, he looks sort of like a gassy Shane McGowan.
I am sending it to his Facebook as we speak.
That's unfortunate. Yeah. So you're talking about like with like maybe like a layer of charcoal or something?
Something like that, yeah. But basically something that you can apply to any pair of boxer briefs. There's a pair of underwear that supposedly you could buy for like 25 pair each. Oh, clown shoes, sorry.
I thought you were actually reaching down to show us your underwear there.
I got them on right now. I love them so much I bought the company. But there was a pair of boxers that you could buy for $25 that supposedly had like a natural absorbency for that the whole thing. But this would be a much more economical product.
What's that? They make those antimicrobial like socks or whatever that I guess there's no supposed to keep you from getting. I guess if you get athlete's foot or if your feet just smell or whatever. But it's supposed to like I don't know absorbs the whatever they're doused in chemicals of some kind and they just swaddle your foot in this some sort of toxic sludge that keeps your feet from smelling. So it'd be like that, I guess.
From Troma Co. I'm sure.
Does he get the flatulence from anything in particular, or just is it a natural part of his makeup?
I think it's a natural part of his makeup because I've known him both when he has eaten nothing but like junk food and garbage like myself, or he's been on like a health food kick and eats like genuinely good food. Like when he dropped me off today, he had an apple. You know, that he was going to enjoy for like a lovely snack. So, I mean, it's not like all he eats is like fried food and burnt hair. Like, there's an actual nutrition that goes along with his food intake. But my God, man.
Yeah.
And I'm a guy that like that can appreciate a good, cheese slice. You know, I can sort of allow that an air biscuit floated just right. I can appreciate. But dude,
the irony here is that Don and I were actually just talking yesterday, I think, about how we are actually two of the only people in the world and certainly in broadcasting who don't really go for flatulence humor.
Yeah.
And we're like, we don't do a lot of flatulence talk here. And then now today, actual literal bathroom and flatulence talk.
What I would suggest, though, if you're with the boxer blockers, what would be awesome is if you could come up with some kind of chemical component that it didn't just block the smell of the fart, but it actually converted it into something lovely. So that, like, you know,
like it charged your cell phone or something.
Yeah, but it's like something in the chemical makeup of whatever is in the pad would like, you know, the fart would go into it, but it would change it into something that when it came out the other side, it smelled like fresh baked cinnamon rolls.
Ooh. That would be horrifying.
Yeah.
Because you could never eat a cinnamon roll again. Because you would
it wouldn't have to be that. It could be,
you go walk by the Cinnabon
Axe
and it would just
spray.
Smell like you're going by a sewage treatment plant.
You know.
Because by that rationale, cinnamon rolls then smell like flatulence and feces.
See, I just had this image in my head flash of like a
the bakery again.
Well, no, it would be like Citizen Kane, but it'd be like the newer version. So, like with me, my empire is built on these boxer blockers. But then the flip side occurs, like where after I've made my fortune, it turns humanity against itself because of the very fact that now sewage treatment plants smell like apple pie.
Talk about just giving a negative association to something that doesn't deserve it. Oh, by the way. I'd like to thank listener Paul Dick, who just this is the only who just gifted me a Primus album on iTunes. Thanks.
Wow, you have just nothing to do with your money, do you?
Wow, way to be a jerk by giving me a gift. You're really the only person I've ever experienced, Paul, who can do that. Being mean by giving me something. There you go. That is he just gave me. I guess it's actually a song. He just gifted. Paul has sent you. It says from iTunes, you have received a gift. Paul has gifted you. Rest in Bones by Primus from the Brown Album.
Well, if it's just one song, then it's a 99-cent joke, so that's not so bad.
I suppose.
I got clown porn anonymously.
Twice.
At Christmas.
Twice.
Well, what other holiday really begs for clown porn? Really? I mean, right, it's not like an Arbor Day kind of a thing.
Get this. I'll just download this later in the privacy of my home. All right. Well, it's probably time we should actually do a little bit of just this.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's start with our Hick Watch.
Oh, damn it. Hold on. I will in just a second. I should have never clicked on iTunes. Now it's the whole thing is just, I gotta try to close goddamn iTunes, which has decided to open it. Would you like us to update everything on your computer?
Okay, well, I'll read something else.
No, I got it. What are we doing here?
Hick Watch.
All right, here's your Hick Watch for Friday.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Here's your Hick Watch for Friday.
Now, I'll admit that the main reason this is a Hick Watch, okay, really the only reason this is a Hick Watch is because it happened in Georgia. But it's just the fact that it's happening in Georgia makes it all the more special. A school teacher in Georgia who may have been upset about losing his job was arrested after he disrobed at his school and walked around naked. Harlan Porter... Also, the guy's name was Harlan.
That's right there.
Harlan Porter was caught by another teacher walking the halls of B.C. Haney Elementary School in Morrow, Georgia, with his clothes off, according to police report. It was around 3:20 p.m. Friday after the students had gone home and no child saw him naked. Captain Calloway of the Morrow Police Department said, had he been seen by students, he would have been charged with child molestation. He was instead charged with public indecency and indecent exposure and booked into the county jail. Calloway, the police captain, said Porter was a teacher at B.C. Haney School, but said he'd learned before the incident that his contract would not be renewed. Police report said Porter had been behaving unusually. Teachers told police he was a vegan who'd sworn off soft drinks, yet he'd gone to Taco Bell for tacos in the hours before he stripped off his clothes.
Oh, well, I think we just cracked this case, Eric, boys.
The arresting officer wrote in the incident report that Porter spoke, quote, of a new level of enlightenment, and he wanted everybody to be free now that his third eye was open.
Six layers of consciousness open.
And I'm not really sure. It seems like he could refer to several third eyes there. So, I mean.
Yeah. The police officers wrote in his report, and this is a direct quote from the police report. I then explained the obvious problem with his third eye being opened in public. He readily agreed that his decision to remove his clothing posed a problem, and he stated that he understood why I would likely have to place him under arrest.
Well, see, so it sounds like maybe he was amenable to being taken into custody then. He wasn't he wasn't violent or obstreperous about it in any way.
Mm-hmm. He put his clothes back on. The officer then handcuffed him, put him in the police car. Porter told the cop he understood his career with the school system was probably over. He said he still wanted to teach, but, quote, on a new level, with hands in the earth, gathering the essence, and learning how to love one another and fully appreciate the spiritual realm.
So everybody wins.
Yeah, so I guess Taco Bell's now giving out peyote poppers with their meals.
Maybe
wow.
Maybe the reason he had previously been vegan is that meat caused him to hallucinate.
The now, was it...
What part of the animal is he eating?
Was it on the... Was it just off the air? Was this actually on FunEmploymentRadio.com where we were talking, where Sarah and I were talking about this guy we worked with who went nuts on the air? Was that on the show?
Yeah,
not that it really matters.
No, it was definitely on the show.
Yeah, so we when we worked, Sarah and I worked at a radio station in I won't specify because I don't think it's public knowledge, but there was a radio station we worked at in the past, and there was a guy who worked at another station in the building, and at one point he went, not unlike this guy, went full on screaming nuts on the air, but in a really like mellow, enlightened, like I have seen, you know, the veil of the universe has been drawn back, and I see all creation as it is.
It's and full he was of stars,
but it's like at the time you don't really realize. At the time, you know, it is really freaky because you're wondering, okay, well, he went from, you know, stage A to stage like Q. Does he then go to stage Z, which is where like the purification begins?
Yeah, the sombrero and the fire axe and the bottle of tequila, you know, calling you
it's
home.
Like he has come to cleanse, but we didn't really know that. And it was like I went into the studio just to bring him like the traffic log or something. And I'm like, not his real name. I'm like, hey, Ted, here's your traffic log. And he's like, okay, you know, he's like, you know, everything's going to be fine, Rick. And that was like his opening line to everybody.
Geez.
I just went and I go, hey, here's your traffic log. He goes, yeah, everything's going to be fine. And I went, He goes, everything's going to be just fine. Everything's going to be okay. I've seen it now. Everything's going to work out perfectly. And then he would just sort of stare at you and then smile like the craziest, happiest smile.
Like
and
the Joker smile. Like,
yeah, and I was like, oh, okay, well, you have fun with that. You know, and I left. And then somebody else went in and they came in. And apparently he'd said the same thing to them. He's like, you know, everything is going to work out. All your troubles, all your cares, it's all going to be great. You know, everything is going to work perfectly.
And you start seeing John Goodman and Barton Fink in your head.
I will show him the lights.
And so like, they're like, hey, Ted's acting really weird. And I'm like, you too. And then so like, and then I free, and then we shouldn't have done this probably. But then we found like somebody else that were like, go in and talk to Ted and see what he says to you. And they're why?
Sorry, I burnt your lunch.
It's just sort of like a smell this. Tell me if it smells rancid. But we just found somebody like, go talk to Ted. He's like, why? I go, just do it. Just go see what he says. And we sent somebody in. And again, he's acting really weird. He was saying that like the universe was speaking to him and telling him that all things were working in total and perfect harmony and that we were all enmeshed as beings under the watchful eye of God. And I was like, that's what we thought. And so we went off and told the HR person. With what I must admit is an equal parts like, you know, concern and then like giddy excitement, you know, because how often do you get to say like a guy's gone nuts on the air? Because that's a thing you hear about in radio all the time. But someday you wonder if like, you know, will I ever get to be there when it happens? And like I totally got to be there because you hear about DJs who go crazy on the air and just, you know,
and
just
it's usually
go
either. Yeah. It's either you walking to your car as they're passing you in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Or you showing up to work and being like, oh, there's squad cars.
Yeah.
And like the fire engines are just leaving.
Well, I've had that. Were you this wasn't here. I guess I was going to ask if you were. This wasn't. This was at a rock station very similar to KUFO in Salt Lake. Anyway, but when I was working in Salt Lake, I don't think I've told this story before because I think that even the shortened version of some of these things was actually I considered inappropriate to discuss on the airwaves, I think, at CBS. But when I worked at this is so horrible, and I apologize in advance. I have to use this term that is not actually profane, but is really unpleasant. So you if you don't want to hear a term that is, again, it's a medical term, it's a scientific term, but if you don't want to hear it, for the next 30 seconds, just whistle to yourself.
Could we guess? Could we try and guess what it is?
It's a scientific term?
Well, I mean, it's in other words, it's a medical term. It's not like – it's not profanity as such. It's just a term you hear and you go, oh. There was this DJ.
Testicular torsion?
It's worse than that, actually.
Prolapse?
No. There was a DJ, and this is in the mid-90s. This is at a rock station. And this is right as Howard Stern was really, like, ascendant with the whole private parts thing. And he, you know, the book had come out. And I think the movie was getting ready to come out. And so everybody was like, you know, every just jackhole in the world was going to be like an edgy shock jock. And everybody thought that they were just, you know, that was the thing. It's like they were going to come on and they were just going to work blue, as they say. And it would just be like hookers and lesbians. And then, you know, you get a 50 share and whatever. And certain people sort of filter that through their heads and they understand the real world application of that. I see provocative programming. I'll find a way to do that. And then certain people are just like this jackass, just dirt hole DJ that worked on the overnight at this rock station. Just the trashiest freaking dirtbag you've ever met in your life. I mean, just like every guy who ever gave the clap to your sister.
That's a lot of guys.
And so he decided that I swear to you, this is true, and I cannot believe that this ever made sense to him. And in Salt Lake City, in Salt Lake, in Utah, he decided this was a good idea. He decided that his zany DJ name, and we've talked a lot about zany DJ names, like our friend Brandon decided he was going to be his name was going to be Yukon, you know, or whatever, or just, you know, a guy like, who are you? I'm, you know, Mudshark or something, you know. I've talked about a friend of mine who's one of the smartest people I know, and she actually was the news girl from Mudflap and Catfish in the morning.
Great rock and roll all day.
Her dream has always been to work at NPR. Instead, she works for Mudflap and Catfish, and I'm not making that up. But this guy decided that his zany on-air DJ name was going to be, I apologize to everyone, brace yourselves. He decided that his zany on-air name was going to be Vaginal Discharge. And I swear to you that's true, and I don't know why he thought that was a good idea. But he was told...
Was there like a shortened version that he would like...
Well, so the DJ, the program director said, you want to call yourself what? No, that's not going to work. No, you can't do that. And so he then just started calling himself Discharge. which, if you hadn't heard the backstory, I guess would be weird, but not actually horrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it's still awkward.
Still unpleasant.
And I think
maybe he was in the military.
It was still really, really unpleasant. And so at one point, the PD just said, you know, look, the whole discharge thing, call yourself hacksaw, pliers, anything. You know, Phillips
table
head.
Tennis.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Steak knife.
Anything. Just call yourself anything. You can't call yourself discharge anymore because it's a horrible name and it makes my skin crawl, so stop it. So they told him to knock it off. Did he take it like a man? No, he took it like a DJ. His response was, and he worked the overnight shift, was to go completely bonkers. Not even really bonkers, just to throw like this horrible tantrum. So what he did is he put on like a Slayer record. And it was, you know, like whatever the most recent Slayer album was. He put it in the CD player, hit repeat, hit play. Turned on the mic, screamed about how the radio station, they were a bunch of pussies, and they wouldn't let him, you know, they were quashing his artistic sensibilities, and then said, you know, like, Howard Stern rules, you know, F you guys. And then on his way out, like, super glued the door to the studio shut, like, squirted super glue into the locks of the radio station out front. This is before key cards. Super glued everything, and then just went home. And, of course, you know, and the PD and the, you know, everybody, they're all at home asleep. And it's like they didn't – I don't think they even realized anything was amiss until like 4 a.m. when they finally got up, you know, like to do the morning show or whatever. And it's like you've missed 700 calls. And it was like this had been going on for like hours and hours and hours. The guy just left and this Slayer record was just – anyway. So that's, you know, so that's awesome. The kind of nuts that I'm sort of used to. But this other guy, he just, yeah, it was like all puppies and rainbows and the universe had spoken to him. And it was the weirdest thing of seeing the HR person leave and walk down to the GM's office. The GM person leave. The GM walked, he walked down to the engineer's office. And the engineer, you know, I think got a couple of big guys like from the sales department. And they all walked down there and sort of, you know. So why don't you come to the lobby and talk it out with us for a while?
Yeah, before everything's on fire and he starts screaming, I'll show you the life of the mind!
Exactly.
And excellent reference.
And thank you very much.
Saw him just sort of being escorted out by engineers who were like, we'd like to hear more about this plan that you've got for us.
Tell us why everything's going to be okay.
He went away to a happy hole for a while. And then a while later when we were working at another station, We just came to work one day, and it's like there he was working, and we were like, whoa, hold on now. And we were wondering if he'd broken free of his restraining devices and sort of gotten to the station. But
it's okay. I'm feeling much better now.
He said exactly that.
No way.
He said, well, you know, I had some difficulties and I had some problems, but, you know, I've worked through them, and I'm feeling all right now, and sorry if I made you feel weird or uneasy, but, hey, everything's going to be fine.
And well, what else are you going to say in that situation, really?
And the thing is, it's like at that point, it's like you got the sense that he was back under control, but was still not the guy that he had been before. He was still really, really like smiling and happy and very Ned Flanders about the whole thing. But I mean, he seemed to have control of himself, but was still just very, very like, you know,
kind
like
of
you
biding his time almost.
Well, you just heard like little happy bells in his head as he spoke. And, you know, and it's like you'd expected like little animated birds to come down and sit on his shoulders while he spoke to you. And it was just it was very, very weird. And to the best of my knowledge, he is still working at Portland Radio. So think on that, everybody. I'm not going to say who he is, and I hate to be that guy, but he is actually, I believe he is still full-time employed at a Portland radio station near you. So.
There's some that rumor that he's in this very room. Right now.
Oh, I wish I had my dramatic music ready. And I don't. I have nothing. I don't have anything dramatic. I think all I have is this.
This week on Discharge and the Baby.
Oh, it's Father Knows Best. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Funny man, Charlie Callis.
Brought to you by DuPont. Make us a fine fabrics. All right. Are we still in the news? Yeah, we are.
Yes, we are.
Hello.
Undoubtedly, the first time Maurice Kirchberg held his daughter Pia 51 years ago, he looked down at his baby girl and thought, someday when I'm old and gray and completely devoid of sex, this girl will buy me a prostitute. Nothing quite cements the father-daughter bond like a lady buying a hooker for her father. According to Tampa's ABC affiliate, 51-year-old Pia Kirchberg offered a prostitute a mere $20 to get it on with her 80-year-old father, Maurice, which a real prostitute would probably have taken nothing less than $100. Kirchberg was out looking in an area of town known for prostitution. Unfortunately for her, Kirchberg was not dealing with a real prostitute, but an undercover officer who was part of a sting.
Yeah.
Both Kirchbergs were arrested for soliciting a prostitute, but at least they, And
well, I mean, probably got like a lot of props at the rec center, you know, or like at the community, you know, where he goes to play shuffleboard. They were like, "Hey, Harvey, the hooker you're getting, well done,
nicely done over there, your daughter, such a good girl. We've always said so."
And daughter, why don't you ever get your father a hooker? That girl over there bought her father a prostitute, not a blender.
You don't even give me a card. I just wanted liners for my shoes. He gets a prostitute.
Wonderful.
I'm actually putting the father-daughter mugshot into the Dropbox right now.
Did they get to take it together? Like one of those, like it should be on a coffee mug or T-shirt at the county fair.
Seriously, world's best daughter.
I guess she only offered.
You're such a good girl, Pia.
I'm assuming she only offered $20 because she assumed her dad would not survive the initial confirmation. Like, yeah, sure, I'll do it.
Or the, you know,
it'll be quick.
Yeah,
she said, really?
The game was going to be over soon after it began.
Excellent. That's
he's off like a shot.
All right, fantastic.
Let's do our clown watch.
Here's your clown watch for Friday.
A Redwood City, California man who tried to pick up blackmail money from his immigrant relatives while dressed in a clown suit has been sentenced to 3 years in prison for passing himself off as a federal immigration agent.
I don't think they know what the uniform looks like for federal.
I know. A federal jury convicted.
You know, red nose, big shoes, an immigration agent.
I tried to get the uniform and they were out at the costume shop, but this one was 50% off.
Yeah, this or that big like foam rubber dollar bill.
And I just
Officer Bozo.
I put a big cartoon badge on one side, you know. A federal jury convicted Frank Salvador Solorza, 46, of conspiracy, impersonating an immigration officer, and attempted extortion. He was arrested February 2009 after he arrived at a home in San Mateo County on a child's bicycle while dressed in a clown suit, a clown glitter wig, and a Pirates of the Caribbean hat complete with dreadlocks.
What country are these people from that he's from whom he's...
He immigrated from Mexico.
Is that so? They're from Mexico too? These people he's shaken down?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
He grabbed a briefcase that he believes contained $50,000 that he had demanded as a prize for not having his relatives deported.
Is it possible that this is what the immigration officers look like where they come from? You know, like
maybe.
I'm thinking it's more like a Godfather thing. Like, there's the kiss of death, and then there's like the clown of disgruntlement,
the clown of protection.
Solorza is a cousin of the victims who immigrated from Mexico. He said that three Norteño gang members had put him up to the scam. A U.S. Assistant District Attorney said in the sentencing memo, "Quote: Norteños normally dress in their colors. They don't use disguises." Let alone engage in crimes wearing clown suits.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that would be the case.
I think this is just a clever ruse to promote the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Or did he just tell them, like, you know, are they new to the country, and so therefore they would believe that anything was our custom, you know?
That is possible.
It is our way here. Well,
possibly he just, like, okay, he goes on the internet and is like, okay, what's the thing that most people are terrified of?
Oh,
clowns.
Yeah.
Done.
Most common American phobia, yeah. You know, therefore, okay.
Yeah, he had been asking them questions about their green cards and when they were going to expire. And then they started receiving phone calls that if they didn't pay $50,000, their papers, if they paid $50,000, their papers would be good forever. They were told that a man in a clown suit riding a small bicycle would be coming to pick up the money.
See, of all the circus folk to send, I would send the strongman, not the clown.
It's just
or a midget, because he could run away quickly.
I mean,
duck under things.
I guess either maybe they
scuttle
just
scuttle away.
Maybe they just realize there's really nowhere to ask about that. Like, I mean, maybe they couldn't. You know, I mean, really, if you went to another country and the guy said, well, look, the auto repairman's going to be by and, he's going to be wearing dealy bobbers and pantless, you know, but that's just how we do it here.
That is our way.
Like, how would you know if that wasn't true? Who would you call about that? There's no 800 number to answer these questions for
maybe
you.
Maybe it was also an attempt to just make it unbelievable if they decided to report it to the police later.
Well, yeah. Then the clown showed up and he demanded money.
I see, a clown, uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. A big clown, and he had a pirate of the Caribbean.
And he was on a tiny bicycle.
We see the rabbit, too. Yeah, all right.
6.5 feet tall. Yeah, we see him. His name is Harvey.
Excellent. There's your clown watch for Friday. By the way, Paul, who sent me the Primus thing, after we responded with a chorus of FUs, he just responds, "I love you, too." Thank you. Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate your rage is delicious to me.
Hey, speaking of, your rage is delicious to me. You know what I was? Do you ever do the thing where you watch a movie in like 20-minute increments over the course of like a week or so? Especially if it's a thing you've seen many times.
Yeah.
What I've seen many, many, many times, but because it is Friday, I guess when the new films open, what I've seen many, many times, but have actually not seen for about, I know, at least 10 years. I have not seen this movie for at least a decade. And I watched it myriad times when it came out. I haven't seen Silence of the Lambs for like a decade.
Oh.
I started watching that last night just because. I don't know why. I think it's like I saw somebody was referring to, maybe it was the Jodie Foster thing. She's got that the beaver, whatever, the movie with Mel Gibson or whatever. And it was a Jodie Foster and a Silence of the Lambs. And I thought, you know, I haven't watched that forever. I'll put it on. And again, I've taken just enough time that it's like I remember, you know, obviously the arc of the story. And I even remember specific lines and specific line readings. Moments before they happen, I'll go, oh, this is when he says that thing that way. Or
you
this
can
is when
sing
it,
along with all the songs.
I can sing along. But I haven't really seen it in long enough now that the general vibe and the tone, obviously I remember sort of the tone of the film, but I'm appreciating them almost from scratch. You know, and what it really just, I mean, it seems like such an understatement, it's such an obvious statement, but what a fantastically creepy and well done movie that is. It's astounding.
It's perfectly paced.
It really is.
It's just amazing.
Also, there's a guy from The Wire in it. Mm. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
I didn't realize it either until, again, it was that thing of like half a second before he's on the screen. I'm like, oh my God, is it? Oh, it is! No! Oh! Strangely, and also, by the way, large sections of Silence of the Lambs take place in Baltimore. So I don't know if that's a coincidence. I don't know if they actually filmed stuff in Baltimore, and so they fish them from the same pool. So so Burrell on The Wire, who is a big, heavy-set guy, becomes commissioner.
Yeah.
Commissioner Burrell, and he's whatever. He is Barney, the guy who lets Clarice in to see Lecter the first time and says, I'll be watching on the camera. You keep to the right.
Oh, yeah. He's actually a very important character in the sequels as well.
Yeah. I forget the actor's name, but that's the same guy. And it's in Baltimore, so they must have been filming on location or something. It's very weird.
I have an interesting story about seeing The Silence of the Lambs. For the very first time, I saw it in the theaters, young adolescent boy, with my dad.
That's odd.
Yeah, so it gets to the
scene.
He
can smell her what?
Yeah, it gets to the part with Migs in the next cell, and I'm just like, wow.
It's amazing that movie was released with some of that content in it.
Oh, my God,
because nobody in that movie is really a heavy hitter, at least not at that point. And it's astounding that it won Best Picture. I mean, it's mind-boggling that it won Best Picture.
It was a shockingly popular movie and that nobody really saw coming. Because it was released midweek. It was a Wednesday release. It was released on Valentine's Day that year. It was almost a throwaway because the studio just saw it as a horror picture.
Well, and it was made by Orion, who at that point had no budget for any kind of promotion because they were teetering on bankruptcy.
And it just was an immediate huge hit. And it was in theaters. These were the days when if a movie was a hit, they actually left it in theaters for months.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was...
Because there was no secondary market, really. And so, yeah, I mean, it ran... Mm. I remember it running just forever. And I mean, and it was, again, it was one of those times, and it's... And I actually... This is a thing I'm glad that I don't have to do anymore. This is a thing that it was not better than. But, you know, my friends and I, we were huge fans of that movie. And because I think I'd read the book in high school, and the movie came out, and, you know, we didn't know what to expect. It was brilliant. And we just went back and saw it in the theater, like... Every week, sometimes a couple times in a week, if you liked a movie, you would see it repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're paying like $6 a throw or whatever it was then. But, yeah, it's just – but I haven't seen it forever. And I got to tell you, that first sequence when she goes down into the dungeon to meet with Lecter. And, I mean, first of all, that whole sequence is so freaking creepy because she's like gate after gate after gate. And the creepy guy's doing the whole thing of like, you know, even when he ate her tongue and showing her the photograph and the whatever. And then – even as much of a cliche and as much as just a big flaming queen as Hopkins has made that character and as Thomas Harris made that character, that I got to tell you, there's like a visceral terror watching Hopkins as Lecter in Silence of the Lambs.
Lecter in the first Red Dragon?
No, that's Brian Cox. And when it was Manhunter.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and he's really good. I like Brian Cox as Lecter a lot. And I like Manhunter more than I like Red Dragon. They're the same, you know, thing with two different names. But I like Brian Cox as Lecter. I really do.
Yeah.
But you see Hopkins as Lecter in Silence of the Lambs and none of the others. You see him there and it's terrifying.
And that whole sequence towards the end of the film where she's down in his basement.
Oh, God.
And with the night vision stuff. That is just one of the most beautifully directed things in any suspense film I've ever seen. It's just still and it's one of the great suspense movie. And I think of like if a movie is scary because of the suspense and not of the horrifying aspects of it, I do tend to think of it as a suspense film. A really great suspense film like that. Also, John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can come back and watch it later knowing every single thing that's... Oh, and
it's in my laptop.
Jim has it right
the
now.
The hell? Why is The Thing in your laptop?
Because it gets me a seat on the bus whenever I'm riding somewhere.
Get out of my head.
But you can go back and you can watch it knowing every single thing that is going to happen in it, and it will still just have you just shivering and tense.
I think Aliens is that way for me.
Totally. Because
Aliens, people, you know, it's an action film and it's a sci-fi film, but Aliens is a suspense picture for a long, you know, there's no actual combat, there's no aliens, there's no firing of guns for like an hour and 15 minutes. It's just build and build and dread and dread. That final sequence in Silence of the Lambs where they're in the – she's in the basement with what – with chewing gum is – it's like they made a list of – which he may – Harris himself may have done this. It's like they made a list of every single human phobia and then ranked them by most common. And they thought, how many of these can we get into one sequence? Fear of the dark, fear of bugs – fear of, you know, the unknown pursuer, you know, fear of enclosed spaces.
Yeah, the claustrophobia.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just like every conceivable fear you could possibly imagine. And then things you couldn't imagine, like whatever that horrible decomposing body thing in the bathtub is. And, you know, it's all of that. And then they just put it in one place, in one sequence.
And another sign of a great movie, rather than just a good movie, a great movie, is when they do something that becomes copied so much, it becomes an overused cliche.
Yeah.
And with Silence of the Lambs, much like with like almost everything in, say, Carpenter's Halloween, you know, you would not have almost any of the horror movies that came over the next 15 years if you hadn't had Halloween do it first.
There's a really great – I'm sorry.
With Silence of the Lambs, it's that sequence where she's going to his house. And he's there, and she's going to the house, and the FBI are like closing in on the house, and they're cutting back and forth, and the doorbell rings, and he looks up, and he's going up to the door, and it turns out like
they're in different places.
They're in different places, and she's the one at the house.
I hadn't thought about that.
And the thing is that has, and now there's this point where you actually see those intercutting now between two places on TV or in a movie, and you go, oh yeah, it's going to be she's really at the place and they're really but in that, when they first did that hadn't been done before, and it was like, oh my God, she's actually at, I mean, you're only so oh my God if you'd read the book before, but you know, it was, I remember seeing
that in
the theater and people in the audience just an audible intake of breath that people just didn't see that coming.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. And you know, and you want to talk about just like a great, just like F you example of letting the bad guy win.
Yeah.
You know, that sequence where just they pull back and Lecter's in Bolivia or whatever, and he's with the fedora and he's like, I'm having an old friend for dinner, and walks off. And it's like, it's amazing again that movie got released that way. You know, with like a truly horrible person being almost an anti-hero by the end of the film, almost sympathetic, kind of. But you know, like they end it with just like, and the bad guy wins and is about to you know, eat a guy.
And the audience chuckles in appreciation.
Yeah. I mean,
the horrible serial killer is walking off to go kill a guy.
And it's done in a way that it without resorting to any of those, again, those just horrible, like overly broad mannerisms that he brought to Lecter in all of the later films, where again, he really did just play him as like this really flamboyant, like unbelievably like ornate and baroque sensibilityed, you know, man of the world, to a point that it became unbelievable on any level.
It's like Freddy Krueger in pretty much all but the first Nightmare on Elm Street film. It's, you know, in the first movie, Freddy Krueger, he did make with some of the little quips, but he was genuinely terrifying.
Yeah.
And then every film after that, he just became this cartoon character.
And it's like Lecter is sort of funny, but terrifying at the same time. And that's the other great thing about Silence of the Lambs is like the stuff that should be funny or the things that should be laugh lines are instead just really darkly funny.
Yeah.
They're just really bleakly amusing.
And you also have Ted Levine. Like his breakout role, and all of a sudden, people are just like, "Yeah, I like that Monk show and all the characters." And I'm just like, "Yeah, do you realize that's Buffalo Bill right there?" And I'm just like, "No, it's not." I'm just like, IMDb, here you go.
I'm really glad, by the way, that that happened for him, because so often if you get the whole Anthony Perkins thing where it's like you get so closely identified and it's like you could just never. I mean, Tony Perkins tried forever to play something other than Norman Bates, and that's why he kept going back to the. Well, it's, you know, another example of that is Andy Robinson, who played Scorpio in Dirty Harry.
Yeah,
great actor, and I think was, you know, it's the old story. He did Shakespeare and he did whatever, and then he did this movie, but it's like he was so good and that movie was such a touchstone that he had tremendous difficulty getting work as anything. After Dirty Harry.
Ron Palillo, who played Horseshack.
Yes.
He was a classically trained actor. I think he actually even went to Juilliard. He did Shakespeare in the Park in Central Park in New York. Then he was Horseshack.
And now Peter Weller.
And we never saw him again.
You got Peter Weller. You got Mark Hamill. You know, it's like, what's Mark Hamill got? He's got Star Wars and Corvette Summer.
The Batman, Joker. The animated series.
He's the Joker.
Yes, but the only Joker reason ever. Why that works, the only reason why that works is because the
you
fact...
You can't see him.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of convincing for someone to sort of really realize that is Mark Hamill.
No,
Also, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Okay, yes. No, that's fair enough. And I guess maybe that works because you would never know it was him.
Yeah.
It works in a weird way. Mark Hamill can only do that because you don't know it's Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
I guess he has to disappear for that to work. No, that's a fair point.
Yeah, but when the first time you see him do that Joker voice, you're just like, oh, my God. And then you just have like this brand new appreciation for Mark.
I've always talked about this, but I don't think I've ever actually put it. I'll bring it in the next time you're going to be here. I actually have, from years ago, I actually have Mark Hamill. And it's over the phone, unfortunately. It's for the days of like ISDN and whatever. I have Mark Hamill actually doing an ID for my show as the Joker.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's because I interviewed him in the mid-90s. When he wrote this comic book called The Black Pearl, that I think ran for just a few issues, but I had him on and it was great, and he was a really, really great interview. And the secret to Mark Hamill, by the way, if you ever interview him, this is my experience. The secret was like, and I'm not saying The Black Pearl was a bad comic, good, bad. I mean, it was sort of there, you know, it was okay. But the secret was we just let him pimp that thing for seriously like 3/4 of an hour. I mean, like we let him talk about The Black Pearl for like 45 minutes, because that's normally a thing you would never do in radio because there's the whole thing of TSL, which is the time spent listening. You know, that you want people not just to listen, but to listen for an extended single period of time, like an uninterrupted sweep of time. And normally they would say, like, you can't have any guest on for 45 minutes. No one's going to listen to it. But it was like that was the one case where you could do it, because every time you would ask him a Black Pearl question, the audience would be like, okay, now he's going to start asking about Star Wars next. Okay, no, after this. No, we'll ask about Star Wars after this. We'll ask about the Joker after this. And the audience just kept waiting because they knew eventually we would. But then once we let him talk about the Black Pearl for like 45 minutes, I swear to you, he did like a solid hour of Q&A with us about Star Wars and about Batman. And he was a great. And then he did a whole lot of, you know, like, Joker here. You're listening to, you know, and it was like, it's awesome. It's so freaking great. I have it somewhere in my basement. I'll dig it up and I'll try to bring it for next week. Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, speaking of
stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I got nothing.
I have a, by the way, an email. Somebody did want to ask, going back to a previous discussion we were having, if your old DJ colleague Discharge was actually Lars Larson.
Yes, I try to disguise his identity, but I think that Romanic
this has been... is Discharge. You're listening to the.
I'm going to call myself Vaginal Discharge.
Vaginal Discharge. Weekends, 2 to 6. Tune in, everyone, please.
Awesome. Squire's Electric. I was already playing this bed. It's not my fault. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/SquiresElectric. That is, again, facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You can also call them if you like, if that's your pleasure, if that's your thing. It's 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. They are proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson radio program. They help to make it possible. By the way, speaking of Lars Larson, I'm not making this up. If you go to Squires Electric, their Facebook page right now, because they do a lot of work for a lot of places around town, the most recent posted picture at Squires Electric at their Facebook page, the electrical panel at the old KXL building, which is where Lars did his show, because, you know, they're all in that new... And what was really, really a wise and shrewd investment in this glass monstrosity downtown that they cannot possibly afford. But they used to be over at this building on McAdam. 750 KXL, he says, obviously a warning that this circuit feeds Lars Larson's old office and should not be turned off during his show, or should it? So Reed, this is look at the photo at facebook.com/SquiresElectric. I swear to God, this is just a total coincidence. You were talking about Lars. So this is the electrical schedule basically showing labeling what all of the circuits are. And there's actually, you know, it says floor plug, studio plug, floor plug, wall plug, center lights, floor plug, and then one that just says Lars.
AM studio lights, and somebody in parentheses wrote Lars. So you just know. It's like, don't screw with this one.
Or I'm the most important thing in this building.
There will be hell to pay.
I carry a gun.
By the way, I did. Oh, well, never mind.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, I was wondering because I know that Jim here did Lars Larson for your Christmas special.
Yes, yes, he did.
And then in, the story was that he had no idea who Lars Larson, he'd never listened to him before he was out. So how did you know that he would be able to do such a dead-on love? Did you just...
Because he's
you
Big
just,
Jim,
you just,
baby.
You just knew.
I sensed it.
He would be able to do that.
It was just a... It was a thing that we just... I felt it. It was like a vibration in the force. It's a... I think... I don't...
Jeepers.
I don't even really remember. Was it... did I approach you about that, or did because Joni DeRoshi directed that? Did she approach you, or did I?
You did, actually. You pulled me aside and took me up to your office and basically said that you were planning on doing the thing. I'm just like, okay. You handed me the script. I started trying to read through, and I'm like, okay. Didn't really. You basically said that you wanted this character to sound like Lars Larson. I'm like, okay. And I gave you like this kind of blank stare. And you're like, okay, just go to his website and listen to a couple of clips of it. I'm like, okay, no problem. I went there. I clicked on one thing and I listened to him talk for about all about 5 seconds. I'm just like, got that.
Nah, boom. I can do this.
Knocked that one right out the box. So.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. So it really is. It's quite well done. and then you revisited that character for an episode of AZ, right? The zombie radio play.
Yes. There was a.
The last broadcaster.
And that basically, I'm just like, okay, I'll just go with it and see if that's what Jason was looking for. And sure enough, that one was actually a lot of fun to do, that character. So I'm glad. I'm sort of happy and sad that he gets killed off at the end, but it was just such a well-written piece of zombie memorabilia that I'm just like, chills even thinking about it.
No, and every time I hear that Christmas play, the Ebenezer I Barely Knew Her, which was especially impressive because, again, it was all done live.
Yes.
You know, and that's really not about me. That was about you guys. I mean, it was really that you guys were able to pull all that off. And it's a... something about... God, there's that line that you say in the Christmas thing about, It's something about, I got to go polish my guns. It is Christmas or something. It was really, really quite wonderful, just the way you read that. So anyway, but you can go to facebook.com/SquiresElectric and you can see this panel from the old KXL building there and perhaps, you know, comment on it. Also, by the way, you note that right below there is a comment. I think it's actually from our friend Aaron Duran. He says, Squires Electric installed the electric in our restored home. It's been the only thing not to fall apart. So Squires Electric, licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors, 503-252-1609. Or facebook.com/SquiresElectric. And on that note, ladies and gentlefolk, it's time for this. It's another exciting installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. I give you your host, Mr. Big Jim Willig.
Thank you very much, Mr. Emerson. It becomes very easy to develop tunnel vision in regards to American comedy. We think that we're the best at everything, losing sight to performers from across the pond. That is, until a Monty Python or a Rowan Atkinson scuttles into view, simultaneously overshadowing and reprogramming the way that we interpret humor. But the comedy universe stretches to every continent, and whoever can embrace that casts the widest net possible. Allow me then to introduce the very manic Miss Tracy Ullman.
Now, here's an area where a white woman just cannot compete with a black woman.
And I think she's a little racist. But Tracy has proven that she isn't just another funny face by topping the UK charts with her singing.
There's no shame in erectile dysfunction. The blood must flow to the corpus cavernosum.
Rigidly, Tracy's talents grabbed the attention of American audiences with her variety show, which gave birth to the most popular spinoff of all time.
It's a real departure. I wanted to play a role, something for my kids, where they're not seeing me holding a gun to someone's head or getting raped or both. And so playing the part of an 8-foot-tall, bright yellow sponge who lives in a pineapple under the sea seemed like a really good idea.
I was actually talking about The Simpsons, but whatever. The many talents of Tracy Ullman have proven that women can indeed revolutionize the world of comedy without pandering to stereotypes.
I'm doing good, but I think this would be a good opportunity to take my shirt off. Woo!
She does Whoa, have a...
That feels good.
She does have a rack I'd put spices on. And with that, I turn the spotlight over to the funniest radio personalities Shelbyville's KBBL has to offer. Rick, they don't know me, Emerson. And Don, you broke my heart in 17 places, Taylor. Your thoughts on the breakaway star, Tracy Ullman.
Don Taylor in the back.
I was a huge, huge fan of the Tracy Ullman show. And I thought, sketch comedy is something. She was a genius at sketch comedy. Yes. Some of the later iterations of her programs, I didn't really care so much. Tracy Takes on HBO, I was never really a fan. But that golden period when she had the Tracy Ullman show, it was the best, I think, about the best that TV had to offer. And to the point where I actually still have like memories of specific sketches that I've just never forgotten. When I had mentioned this to Rick a couple of months ago, in fact, that there was one episode in which, because my favorite stuff that she used to do there, because she had started out as a singer, as a pop singer, was that she would do these, she would come up with these really bizarre, convoluted comic sketch ideas that would then segue into her singing a song that was only sort of weirdly, bizarrely, tangentially connected to the sketch. It was very much, since The Simpsons started on her show, in many ways, it was a lot like the way The Simpsons will start an episode with something
unrelated,
which ends up 10 minutes later finally rolling into what the plot actually is. And in one of those sketches particularly, which was my favorite, she played a dissatisfied housewife who was having trouble getting her husband to give her input on the remodeling of their kitchen. And he refused to help pick out like paint colors or cabinetry or whatever. And so finally, after he picks up his briefcase and leaves in just anger and frustration, she tells the painters to just paint everything black. And then the music starts up. And she just starts singing the Rolling Stones' Paint It Black while running around slapping black paint on everything. And then the end of the sketch was actually a little anticlimactic with him walking in the door and every single surface in the kitchen is painted black. But it was not only just a great rendition of the song, because she's an excellent singer.
Yeah.
But it was just the way that she got to that song was so bizarre and hilarious. And that was a lot of, you know, what her show was about. There was, plus, you know, she was working with some great people like Hank Azaria.
And very much is like the Tracy Ullman show birthed the Simpsons, because, you know, you got Dan Castellaneta, Sam Simon, James L. Brooks, all sort of contributing to that. And then they kind of, like, I almost felt like they jumped ship, but really the Tracy Ullman show kind of like Zenith, it did what it had to do, which was to bring back the variety show for the 90s kind of audience. And it did it perfectly, and it spawned its own kind of creation. Something that I didn't know, George Clinton wrote the theme song.
Yes.
So you got P-Funk writing the theme song, which starts you off with like, okay, I'm going to love this show. I don't care what the next 30 minutes have in store for me.
I'll say this. I actually didn't. I was one of the people who did not really watch the Tracy Ullman show when it aired originally. And I've seen it since then. I just sort of, I kind of knew about her because of The Simpsons. And I heard that she was really talented. And, you know, she was one of those people that you always just, you heard, for me, that I heard discussed, that people would reference her. Like, they go, oh, that Tracy Ullman, she's really, really good. And then I saw her in, I don't know, it's like I saw her in a couple films just doing small roles. She's in Bullets Over Broadway, and she's also in, it's like Death Becomes Her or something.
Yeah. She was also in I Love You to Death with Kevin Kline, which was actually really very good.
And so I'd seen some of this stuff, and I was aware that she had, you know, some level of talent, but she was sort of off my radar. And then in the early 2000s, actually, Tracy Ullman, I watched her, it wasn't Broadway, but it was at the Henry Fonda Theater. I watched Live and Exposed, which is this stage show that she did in, I guess, 2000, maybe 4 or so, 2005. But I watched Tracy Ullman Live and Exposed, which was If you've seen John Leguizamo's Freak, Live and Exposed is a lot like Leguizamo's Freak, and that it's comedy and autobiography merged together. And what it really is it doesn't exist just because of this, but it is just also then a showcase for her to do just like her incredible mimicry and accents. And that was a thing that was the moment that I was cemented in how much of a freaking genius she was, because I remember seeing Leguizamo's Freak the first time, and I kind of knew Leguizamo's being the clown in Spawn, basically, and that guy from he was in Carlito's Way, and that was kind of it. And I'm like, John Leguizamo, one man show. What's up with that? And then, as you know, if you've seen Freak, you watch it. And the first time he talks about, being born in Jamaica Heights, Queens, and he does this rapid succession of all of the different accents of the different cultures and ethnic groups there. And they're dead on.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, well, wait a minute. Like,
you can't fake that.
Yeah. It's like, I immediately have to reassess this guy and rejudge him. And then he weaves together poignance and comedy and surrealism and hilarity. So she does this in Live and Exposed. It's her autobiography. She tells about growing up, going to school, getting into comedy. She talks about being a singer, being an actual singer in Britain. And she actually performs a song or two. And then she does this great thing where she takes some of her most well-known characters and accents, and she sort of deconstructs them, and she talks about who they were based on in real life. And she would say, and then I went to school where the headmistress was named blah, 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 and she was, and here's how she behaved. And she would do this mimicry, this impression of the headmistress. And then you would see her kind of go, and it would click into place, and it would morph into the voice for one of her well-known characters. And the audience would kind of go, and it was that thing of like seeing her lead you up to this point, and then the Revell model is snapped together, and you see in front of you this thing that they had seen on the Tracy Ullman show, the thing that they had heard her do, and she has just shown you the real-life place it came from. And meanwhile, it's this tour de force of vocal acting, and of not just impressions, but of like inflection, and of timing, and release, and it was just... And I have to say that I actually still haven't seen a lot of the Tracy Ullman show, but simply based on Live and Exposed, which I think you can get on, like Netflix or DVD or whatever now. I mean, that even if that was the only thing she'd ever done, even if that was the only thing I'd ever seen of her, I mean, it was genius. It was just flat out freaking genius. So she really is. I'm pound for pound one of the best I've ever seen.
And then you bring in like her work with John Waters in Dirty Shame. And that really kind of like brought her back around, I think, to a lot of American audiences, because, the Tracy Ullman show, it hit. She got she was already, like you said, she was already famous over in Britain. She comes over here. Tracy Ullman show hits, huge success. Simpsons hits and just completely overshadows that. And then she kind of like fades into the background. She got the Tracy Takes On thing, which was kind of hit or miss with a lot of audiences, because they kind of felt like she was just kind of rewarming her Tracy Ullman show, which it really wasn't. It had its own kind of standalone characters from that. I mean, some of the jump, like the Kay character, Kay Clark, which is like, hello, mother, this is Kay. And so, I mean, some of those characters made the leap with her, but it was definitely its own animal. And then she kind of got in with Waters. And John Waters, and with a Dirty Shame, was just like, oh yeah, let's have more of that, please.
She was also in
a Dirty Shame was such a messy, like all over the place movie, just like all of John Waters' films are.
it leaves a little bit on you.
She
I feel.
Was well, and also just like some of it is brilliant and hilarious, some of
it's
it
a mixed
it's
bag.
Kind of, oh, yeah. Really? Yeah. But she was just dead brilliant in it.
What is the? She was also in. The Woody Allen movie where they make the cookies. Small Time Crooks.
Yes.
She's in that, too. I think she plays Woody Allen's wife. I think she's the character. She's the wife of the Woody Allen character. And that's, again, where a thing where, you go, oh, it's Tracy Ullman. And then because she's so gifted, she just vanishes into this other person, like, instantly. And sometimes, especially in Woody Allen films, Woody Allen movies are at this point are a little bit like they're a little bit like Spike Lee films or Robert Altman films in that it just like becomes the stunt casting and it becomes so overwhelming and distracting. But she
was also in his
never
film Bullets Over Broadway.
Right? Well. Yeah. No, we were talking about that. Yeah, that which I think is the first movie I ever saw her in.
Okay.
That's one with Chaz Palminteri, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was that, and then but she just completely vanishes in a way that you don't notice her anymore, which can be a problem in ensemble films where everybody is sort of known or everybody is a name. It becomes just like, you're just waiting to like play guess that star at whoever's in the next scene. And she doesn't do that at all. She actually brings a little bit of lovability to a wife who is just a harridan in that movie. So
I'm surprised she doesn't do more just voice work for animated films, because she did She and Joanna Lumley were the two sisters in... weren't they? No, I'm thinking of someone else. But she was. She did a voice in Corpse Bride. She just did something for Tale of Despero not too long. But I'm really surprised I haven't seen her get hired. Maybe she just doesn't want to do it or something. But I'm surprised she doesn't do more voices for animation work, because that is something at which she is just a genius.
Right. It might be a thing that she's really good at, but it might be a thing she just doesn't enjoy. I mean, that might actually be a more difficult form of acting for her than other things. You know, you think of like Johnny Depp vanishing into his roles so much, but I imagine that takes a great amount of work, and it takes maybe not as much work, but I would say it takes a significant amount of work in a different way to do that with vocal acting. And so maybe it's just it might be taxing. I don't even know if she's doing anything anymore. I don't know if she's active much in comedy or in film, or if she's just sort of, you know, if she's just kind of made her money and taken it easy at this point. I really honestly don't know. I've kind of lost track of her.
According to IMDb, she's still doing State of the Union. She's been doing that since 08. So 08 through last year, that's what she's been
doing. And is that what – I don't even know what that is. Is that a series?
It's on Showtime.
Oh, okay. All right.
I thought it ended last year, though.
I think it did, because it says 08 through...
Was it a sketch comedy or what?
Yeah. But the thing is, she's also just stinking rich.
A
few years ago, she was on one of those lists of the richest show business people in Britain. So it's like, you know, I suppose if she wants to take a little time off, it's not going to hurt.
Probably at her leisure.
She can pay the gas bill.
Excellent.
The thing, though, that I remember most about the original Tracy Ullman show was the part at the end where she came out in her robe after everything was done, and she really just straight up talked to the audience. Like, she'd entertained you for a better part of a half an hour. Now she's going to just totally take down the fourth wall, and she's going to talk to you and kind of like, it really very much kind of like endeared me to her in that sense. So it's like, it's not so much that she's just like, I'm wacky and zany, I do all these characters, but she also is a real person behind all that, which really kind of gave all of her other characters a little bit more depth to her.
Yeah, it did. She had that kind of Carol Burnett sort of a thing where, you know, you felt like you were actually being spoken to by a real person, which is especially important when you're somebody who just does characters.
Yeah.
Because after a while, that can feel a little alienating to the audience. I think that has a distancing effect. So you can find out more about Big Jim Willig at BigJimWillig.com. That is BigJimWillig, BigJimWillig.
Oh, geez.
.com.
That's
and
right.
When is the Applebee's thing?
Applebee's thing is going to be the 7th. I should be up in Spokane on the 14th. I also have some other gigs.
Where is this in Spokane? Where are you?
I'm going to save that for.
Oh, really? I see. Okay. I just don't want to give it all away at once.
No, I don't want to.
I mean, and for now,
out.
We really should be all concentrating on getting to Applebee's.
Yeah, I think so.
I just do that thing of like any city where you lived, and people go, I'm going to wherever place you used to live. And you go, really? Where at? You know, like, I don't really. It doesn't affect me, but I'm reflexively curious.
I got to ask, have you scoped out the space at the Applebee's? Do you know? I mean, do they have? And are you just going to be standing over like in one end by
the
salad bar or something?
Yeah. I haven't yet. So part of me feels like I have, and it's in Gresham, which is already a very colorful environment.
A many textured place.
Yes, very many, many layers, like an onion peel.
Are people going to know that there's entertainment, or is this just going to be something where...
like a flash mob?
Well, like when I used to go to IHOP when I was hungover and in my 20s, and I'd always forget that on Sunday morning they had this elderly Mexican clown who went table to table making balloon animals.
Oh, my God.
And I would be hungover and sitting there going, oh, crap, I forgot about the clown. So is this going to be like people... come on, kids, we're going to go to Applebee's. It's like, and there's Big Jim going, hey, everybody, just like standing at one
side
of the room.
All those riblets, huh? All right, good, great, all right, fantastic. And then like casually working in like the food and drink specials into my act. No, I guess this is something that's been going on for a while now. And I had heard about it, and for the life of me, previous to being asked, I'm like, I don't know. It's like it's a corporate environment, which no, you have to be like super squeaky clean, and not just like in what you're the words you're using, but in the topics as well. So
yeah, but you do well there, man. I mean, that's the thing, is you do like a even if it's, you know, like a local one location thing, you do well at a corporate gig.
Yeah,
it's money in the bank.
Some of these kinds of things, though, they can be tough, because I when I went through my brief period of doing stand-up. There were those things where you would take, like, any job. And it was also, like, it was, like, the late 80s, and everybody in the world decided, hey, we can make money having a comedy night.
Right.
So it was like, I know I did one thing at a pizza place.
Yeah.
And there were, like, five of us, like, just standing at one side of the room trying to do our stuff while they're going, number 24! You know, and the people are coming through with the pizzas. And it was like Hedwig and the Angry Inch when they're in the fish restaurant. It was just, could be tough.
The worst I can say with 100% clarity, I carried the pay stub with me just to remind me, no matter how bad a gig is, it will never be as bad as the Mount Hood dinner train doing comedy there, which was...
I don't even know what that is.
It's a train that, like, you hop on and it goes, you go, obviously, you see the sights between here and Mount Hood. It gets to this tiny town where the comics kind of meet up with it and they get on, and then for the ride back, you are the entertainment. So as there's, like, wow, cleaning up dinner and serving dessert, you are performing comedy. Now, where on the train would one perform comedy, you would ask? In the foot and a half wide walkway that is sort of like in between. Oh my God, it was bad. The train's in motion. People are like kind of like eating and finishing up their meals. The poor waitstaff is trying to clear away the dishes.
Everybody's just boozed and, you know, and eaten, so they were all like half asleep.
And, yeah. Yeah, and it was like there was a lumberjack, not a lumberjack, but like a woodworkers kind of union, their dinner meal. So it was like their whole like corporate outing for this this lumber union. So these guys are drunk and just like, one guy yells, I'll give you $50 cash if I can throw you from this train. I'm like, let me see the money. Let me see the money.
Jesus.
There was a couple there that
starting
was on
their... sound good about now, sir.
There was a couple that was on their first date and they both had motion sickness from the train. So, like, I was like, that was the last train that I did, and they're just like kind of like slumped over in their seats. I'm like, what's the matter with you two? You guys have a little too much to drink? And they're just like, we're both very sick. Please stop talking.
BigJimWillig.com is where you find out more about him. That is BigJimWillig.com. Awesome. That's fantastic. All right. It makes me feel better about all those years that I was a wedding DJ, frankly. All right. Well, on that note, we will do this. Kids will bring down the curtain on another exciting episode of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I want to thank our guest, Mr. Big Jim Willig. And again, find out more about him at BigJimWillig.com. So we're heading into the weekend. We'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, an encore of this very fine radio program, and then a smattering of things from throughout the weekend, then from the archive. And I'll dig up that Mark Hamill thing for next week as well. Don't forget, we are going into the weekend, which means that Monday is going to be the 2nd, which means that Tuesday is going to be the 3rd. Tuesday, May 3rd, that is the release date for Zombie Economics, written by Lisa Desjardins from CNN and myself, along with our good friends Todd Workhoven, and stylish cover art by Portland artist Roger Bridges. You can find out more about that at Zombie Economics. economics.com or mayofthedead.com, which is your clearinghouse for all of the May-oriented undead activities, including the zombie walk. So we'll talk about more of that stuff next week. You can find out more, though, at zombieeconomics.com, and then save the date, as they say, coming up Thursday, May 12th, 7 p.m., Barnes & Noble Lloyd Center is going to be the reading and signing for Zombie Economics. So that is Thursday, May 12th. Barnes & Noble Lloyd Center. So write that down now if you would be good enough to do so. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all, so thank you for that. Keep spreading the word. That never goes unappreciated. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. Have a safe weekend. It is Friday, May 29th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See you Monday. Bye now.